line. Firstly, what we'll then do first will be to do the normal parliamentary procedures of introduction, so that we know who is here and the members that are here, and deal with apologies if any member of the committee apologizes. And then if you look at the program today, we have an item number 3. I'm going to propose that we're going to move the item to be the last item. We'll not be able to deal with it now. But again, I'm informed that there's still further consultation, but we'll deal with that item that deals with the consideration and adoption of the motion of desirability on the proposed private members bill. We'll deal with that later. Now let us begin with the introduction of the
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Good morning to you, Valerie. Now, just ask Chair, on the first item on the agenda, is there anyone from the department that's going to be here to assist us in the event there are some follow-up questions, or is it just 5 late?
Well, this first item meaning that the...
Sorry, I'm referring to the item number...
Number 3.
Yeah, it's the briefing by 5 late aviation.
No, we don't have the department today. You'll recall, members, this is a follow-up meeting of the oversight. We have listened to the presentation that was made by the department. We have listened to the Minister of Home Affairs, Minister Malusi Gigaba. We went as a committee to visit the fire plate. We interacted with the officials that we met there, but we have not met the directors responsible for the running of the fire plate. So therefore, today's meeting will be to afford the people that we wanted to meet, specifically that we wanted to meet the owners of the business there. That's the reason that we have decided not to involve the department at this moment. We will get the engagement of the department based on the recommendations that we'll make moving forward. We'll then have to invite the department and many other departments. If you look at the report of the portfolio committee, it does raise the number of areas that require some kind of an intervention. We'll deal with that when we meet with all the departments that will be identified at the end of this meeting. For today's purpose is to afford the Fireblade directors to speak to us on the issues that they want to engage them with, specifically the general operation, for them to end up being where they are today, meaning that the running of that particular private facility called Fireblade is the name of the company, as I understand now. But we'll get to know. It's very important that we get from them to take us through that process, what led to that. The issues of the court, I'm aware, members, and we're aware ourselves that this matter, with the last engagement with the minister, we informed that he's going to appeal as a decision of the Supreme Court of Appeal to the Constitutional Court. That process, we have not received anything so far. So therefore, we cannot sit back and wait for the minister's appeal when the operations are already running there. So the departments are expected to perform. And the role of the portfolio committee, therefore, is accountability. People who are involved, especially when you involve the state, there must be accountability. So that's the reason that we're going to be engaging. But I think let's note this point, Honorable Osei. We will come back to that particular area because the information we receive from the department may be different from what we're going to get today from this presentation that we're going to receive. I'm not sure if any presentation has been prepared and distributed. Have you given them to members? No, give members. Give members. apologies again, colleagues, that and our guests that are here. This venue is under, Parliament has gone through under massive renovations and construction. Now, the air conditioner of the building somehow interrupted in the process of the renovations. So therefore, if you feel free to take out your jacket at some point when it's getting hot, because it is going to get hot as we move on with the engagement, right? So feel free to take your jacket. And you can see some of our members are right at the corner there because they can't take heat. So on that note, can we start with yourself, just introduction quickly for purpose of the record. We'll then come to...
Morning, Chairperson, and our guests. My name is Nomhle Dambuza, a member of this committee. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Lengwe Mkhalipi, a member of this portfolio committee.
Morning. My name is Maisela Gekana, member of this committee.
Good morning. My name is Donald Kumede, a member of this committee.
Morning, everybody. My name is Tandiwe Kenye, member of this committee.
Good morning, Hanif Hussein, member of the committee.
Good morning, Archibald Figlen, a member of this committee.
I see the other members there. I saw Mr. Okay, it's fine. Mr. Waters is gone. Okay, Honorable Lateng is from the NCOP. You're welcome to sit here.
Thank you.
But you know that you can't talk, obviously. But no, you can't talk. Unless the joint sitting of the committees of NCOP and NA. But you're welcome. Mamu Ngomo, as she's coming in, you're welcome. Okay, let's do the quick introduction of...
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry for the health and safety.
No, that's fine.
Issues, I'm here at the back.
Okay.
It's too hot. I'm not undermining anyone. It's just that for the health purposes. My name is Dineo Raputi. I'm the member of this committee. Thank you.
Honorable Raputi, I think the point is made obvious based on the condition of the venue that we are using. Okay, can we then get the introduction from yourself?
My name is Nicky Oppenheimer. I'm chairman of Farblade Aviation.
Can you just give us again for record? You speak more of an English language, you know, they go very...
I'll try again, Chairman.
Okay.
My name is Nicky Oppenheimer. I'm the chairman of Farblade Aviation.
Thank you very much.
With the African Way Chair, my name is MC Mani Dipicho. I am a director of this company too.
Hey, comrade, yeah. Thank you very much. Yes,
Chairman Jonathan Oppenheimer, and I am director of Fireblade and chief executive officer.
Thank you very much.
Chairman, good morning. I'm Robbie Irons, and I'm a director of Fireblade Aviation.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate you all. Welcome. At the back is a journalist at the back. Support staff, okay. So as you know that in the engagement of the committee, whatever that you may want to communicate will be communicated quietly with the person that you want to talk to. The committee will not give you the permission to speak for the purpose of those who will be under oath as they engage with the Parliament committee. If we have met them outside Parliament, they were not going to talk under oath, you see. So now, because we are in Parliament, and therefore the rules and the legislation that governs such work, in fact, it becomes quite paramount that we have to take this exercise. Okay. Right. On that note, therefore, colleagues, let's, before we get the engagement with the document, can I then administer the process of the oath? And I think all of us, I'm going to ask you, firstly, that are you going to do affirmation or oath? Oath. all of you out. Okay. So let me then firstly read the legislative framework that require us to perform this particular oath. And then from there, I'm going to ask all of you to stand and then you'll raise your right hand after reading after me to say thank you, God. I'll guide you on that. Section 16 of the Powers and Privileges and Immunities of Parliament and Provincial Legislature Act No. 4 of 2004 regulate the swearing-in of witnesses appearing before the Committee of Parliament. In particular, it empowers the person presiding in the case of the chairperson, being myself, at the inquiry to administer the oath or accept affirmation from a person appearing before it. In other words, there are two options for any witness. The chairperson must recognize each witness' choice in this regard, and by now we now know that you will take an oath. Prior to administration of the oath or affirmation, the chairperson must warn the witness that he or she is required by law to answer all questions fully, truthfully, and satisfactorily. He or she must proceed and produce and any documents that is required to produce in connection with subject matter of the inquiry. So here is a general meeting of the committee will not be dealing with the inquiry. Notwithstanding the fact that the answers or document could incriminate him or her or expose him or her to a criminal procedure or damage, it is an offense to make any false misleading statement while under oath. I think that one we are very sure of. The chair must further ensure that witnesses that in terms of Section 16(3) of Powers and Privileges and Immunities of Parliament, any evidence given under oath or affirmation before the committee may not be used against him or her in any court or place outside Parliament, except in criminal proceeding concerning a charge of perjury relating to evidence or document required in this proceeding. The chair then may proceed to administer oath or affirmation depending on the choice of the witness. The witness will repeat after the chair and alter the following oath of affirmation. So we can then all stand and then you'll read your name as I proceed with reading after me. The witness must be instructed to raise the right hand. Then you'll read after me with your name then. I swear that the evidence I shall give will be the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth. Raise your right hand and say, so help me God. Thank you very much. We can sign those forms then. You can sign those forms and then the secretary will then collect them. On the 31st of October, the Portfolio Committee of August, the Portfolio Committee visited the Fireblade. Both it was the Fireblade and the Refugee Center at the Dortmund with the Refugee Center. Part of the engagement of the Portfolio Committee was to firstly to observe and to understand the operations of the Fireblade. As we are all aware, members, that this issue did not only emanate out of the department's day-to-day operations, but is part of the court order that was given after the matter was appealed by the department, was dismissed, and therefore the order was given for the Fireblade to proceed with operations. It's on those basis that today's engagement will be receiving a presentation from the Fireblade on the operation of the particular terminal at the OR Tambo International Airport. in our engagement with the visit, during the visit, we've interacted with a number of departments. As I think we'll know that we met the officials from the Department of Health, the Department of Home Affairs, the Department of Agriculture, South African Revenue Services, Department of Environmental Affairs, and the South African Police. These are people that are in the operation of the particular private port of entry, which is called the Fireblade. It's on those basis, therefore, members, that they will then afford the opportunity to the Fireblade Directorate to present to the Portfolio Committee of their operations. And I think, colleagues, as we do this exercise, there are a number of areas that we've noted of concern that we'll want to get clarity on. So I think this presentation will be able to assist us to get to some of the issues that the committee will be interested to get clarity on. And at the end of this engagement, the committee will then make recommendations. Because as you know, that the work of Parliament will be that the committee will make a report to the House with recommendations, and once those recommendations are adopted, will have to be implemented by those who will be found to have to implement those recommendations. But at the same time, in between this engagement, between the report and Parliament, the committee will want to engage further with a number of stakeholders that are identified via the committee oversight visit into that particular area. So on that note, we can then afford you, Mr. Oppenheimer, to make your statement, as you said, that you will first want to make a comment, and then maybe you will then guide us as to how you're going to present this report here. The report is addressed to the Portfolio Committee of Home Affairs. For record sake, you will have expected, maybe with a clear letterhead of the company and a sign-off by anyone who's responsible for signing off the report. But I understand that it just arrived, it's okay, because we'll be speaking on this report under oath. We'll take it that will reflect the true reflection of what we'll be saying. On that note, thank you very much, and then for this.
Thank you very much, Chairman, and of course I'm very happy to append my signature to the statement I'm going to make, if that's helpful. As I said, I would like to make a short statement, and then I think the way to proceed with your guidance is for us to be prepared to answer any questions you or your committee may have as to the operations of Fireblade. But to some background to what has been going on. In 2012, my son Jonathan and I were in a position to explore a long-held ambition to invest in a world-class gateway into South Africa for non-scheduled aviation. And by non-scheduled aviation, we mean aircraft that are not run by major airlines or on a schedule, and which serve customers primarily in tourism, business, and in the public sector. We initiated a detailed review of the available options and started consultation with potential stakeholders to better understand the market. And it soon became apparent that OR Tambo International, unlike most major airports in the world, did not have a facility dedicated to both domestic and international non-scheduled aircraft movements. Further research identified underutilized land and facilities within the Donnell complex at OR Tambo, which could be turned into an ideal terminal for non-scheduled traffic. We then entered into discussion with the Airports Company of South Africa, AXA, and with its property company, Precinct 2 Alpha, and Donnell. All the different parties were supportive of our proposal, and in due course we signed a lease agreement with Donnell for the facilities in question, and Fireblade Aviation came into existence. In parallel, we started consultation with other stakeholders to determine their support for the project. From inception, Fireblade's business plan, as shared with Donnell, AXA, and other key stakeholders, was that customs and immigration facilities should be available on site. These were always to be manned by the state. Without the ability to support international flights, it was clear that the business venture would not be profitable. Both Donnell and AXA were enthusiastic supporters of the concept, and Fireblade opens its doors to domestic traffic in September 2014, following an investment of approximately 150 million rand. Because of the need for the state to provide customs and immigration services at Fireblade, we knew full well that approval would be needed from many different government bodies. Early engagements ensured that the building's design had the necessary space dedicated to international movements and included those parties' specific requirements within that design. This process started in 2012, and over the best part of the next 4 years, 27 approvals by various government bodies were obtained. By the early part of 2016, the sole approval outstanding was that of the Minister of Home Affairs. Then, during a meeting at the Minister of Home Affairs office in Pretoria on January the 28th, 2016, Minister Gagaba, the then minister, granted his final approval. Following this meeting, Home Affairs failed to act on the approval granted by the minister, and it soon became clear that there was no intention of honoring this. After multiple engagements with Home Affairs and the minister's office to understand this change of heart, Fireblade was left with no choice but to seek clarity from the courts. Fireblade saw this as a last resort and followed this route reluctantly. The Pretoria High Court, then the full bench of the same court, followed by the Supreme Court of Appeal, ruled on this matter, and all found that the minister had indeed granted permission to Fireblade, and his attempt to argue otherwise was ill-founded. The full bench of the High Court went so far as to say that the minister had told deliberate untruths while under oath on facts central to the matter, thereby violating the Constitution. After unsuccessfully applying for leave to appeal to the Supreme Court of Appeal, the minister has subsequently lodged an application with the Constitutional Court for leave to appeal these judgments, but crucially, no longer challenges the findings that he did grant approval. Following these judgments, on February the 12th, 2018, the first international flight passed through the Fireblade terminal. There have been 691 international movements carrying 1,401 passengers as at the 30th of October. And we would like to take this opportunity to pay tribute to the state officials who provided this service with great efficiency and who have, we are certain, contributed to those passengers' favorable impressions of South Africa. At this point, I would like to specifically address three comments which have been made in the media about Fireblade. Firstly, that this is the only privately owned facility of its kind in South Africa. And secondly, that Fireblade enables uncontrolled flights in and out of South Africa. And then lastly, that this is a facility for the exclusive use of the Oppenheimer family. These comments are simply not true. To address each in turn, in addition to Fireblade, other privately owned airport facilities exist in the country, such as Lanseria and Kruger Mpumalanga international airports, who offer international services. There are also multiple bonded warehouses at all South Africa's international airports, which process goods carried on international flights that are privately owned. Therefore, Fireblade is by no means unique. All the above facilities enjoy services and support from the appropriate state agencies in terms of carrying passengers and cargo into and out of the country. The primary control of aircraft arriving and departing at any airfield is exercised by the Air Traffic National Services, ATNS, who manage South Africa's national airspace on behalf of the South African government. All Fireblade's movements are controlled by ATNS, by ACSA, and by the Department of Transport, while Customs and Immigration Services supporting international movements are provided by the state and take place in a sterile area within the Fireblade terminal. There are no circumstances under which aircraft can circumnavigate or circumvent the system. Finally, the Fireblade terminal is available to any non-scheduled flights that receive the necessary permission from the South African government and meet Fireblade's operating criteria. Since Fireblade opened for business in 2014, there have been 13,884 movements, of which less than 5% were operated on behalf of the Oppenheimer family. And of the 691 international movements that have taken place since February of this year, only 6% were operated on behalf of the Oppenheimer family. As with all commercial businesses, Fireblade is constantly seeking to attract the maximum number of legitimate customers possible within its AXA-agreed mandate to only handle non-scheduled flights. We're extraordinarily proud of the Fireblade facility and are delighted with the cooperation of the various state entities providing independent services to it. We think that Fireblade is in the process of achieving its ambition to provide a world-first-class service to its customers and enhancing their perceptions of South Africa, while at the same time reinforcing the Oppenheimer's enduring commitment to our country. Thank you very much, Chairman, for allowing us to make this brief statement. As I say, we are very happy now to answer any questions you or your members may have about our operations or about Fireblade in general.
Thank you very much. Can we, from my side, let me start with clarity. Is there an agreement in place between yourselves and the state or the State Department? Let's start with the Home Affairs and all of these departments that have sort of listed with you confirm that there's been a consultation and approval. Can you just deal with the issues of approval first? You being in operation from 2014, the kind of activities, meaning that did you only deal with domestic travel or international travel? If there was international travel, how therefore was that dealt with both by immigration? You may want to talk more about disagreement, arrangement, parties that were consulted, departments that were consulted in the process. And then I want you to speak more around the point that you make on your second page on the Constitutional Court leave to appeal the judgment, but crucially no longer challenging the finding that he did get approval. I want you just to elaborate more around this area here, because my understanding, it seems to be this matter has no longer been challenged by the minister, as he promised the committee that he will be appealing the decision of the Supreme Court of Appeal on record in Parliament here. So you may want to speak more around those areas. And if there's any document with regard to agreements that you are in position of, is it possible that you can share that document with the committee of Parliament? As members are preparing themselves to ask questions, can you respond on the two points that I've just made?
Thank you, Chairman. I think I will have a quick chance, and then others may want to also have their bite at this cherry. Fireblade, as we say, started operating, first of all, simply with domestic traffic. But the same restrictions as to authorities to operate applied there as have applied elsewhere. We entered into, as I said in my statement, negotiations with a number of government departments, and Robbie Irons will be able to detail those and detail the 27 approvals we got. From the moment we started domestic operations, we expected almost daily to be granted the state would be prepared to man the facilities to facilitate international movements. This took much longer than we had thought to arrive at that outcome, to the point where the minister did indeed give his approval, even though There were difficulties after that where the minister tried to argue in court that he had not done that, but the three courts all found that he had indeed given his approval, and from that moment on, international movements took place in the terms of my letter. Jonathan Robbie?
Mr. Chairman, in terms of the specific agreements to operate from a domestic flight perspective, the normal approvals that come from Air Traffic Navigation Services, ATNS, the airport itself, the Department of Transport, as Arar Tambo is what we call in the trade a slot-constrained airport and requires a DOT approval to move, operated for all domestic and international flights. During the course of 2015, in preparation for international movements, Robbie Irons and the team at Fireblade had spent a great deal of time talking to all the various stakeholders, and a standard operating procedure was set up and agreed during 2015. Robbie?
Correct.
That was set up during 2015. And subsequent to the court orders, we revised that agreement with the various actors in the various stakeholders on the government side, and a second draft of the agreement, which was originally entered into, unsigned but verbally agreed between both sides in 2015, is sitting with Department of Home Affairs since the 4th of April of this year. And we have not heard anything back from them since, notwithstanding the fact that there is this draft agreement standing with, this revision of the agreement standing with the department as we speak, we are operating in compliance in conjunction with that agreement, as it made a great deal of sense and has been working very well during the process so far.
Just before Robbie starts, I should say, Chairman, that attached to the court papers, which are in the public domain of the various court actions that we have had to institute and go through with against Home Affairs, is a document setting out details of all the 27 approvals. And so that is in the public domain.
So you felt that you will not share that with Parliament because it's in the public domain?
Mr. Chairman, we would have to provide you with all the court papers. There are a stack about.
No, that's fine. We can be a pile in a pile. Parliament wants information. Parliament must be given information.
So we will endeavour to provide.
I agree that maybe we will not have alerted you that normally when you deal with Parliament, it's documentation. That is why even my question was more about your presentation, that it must be signed off, you know, so that it take ownership of what you are presenting to Parliament, right? And I want to take it that, let's note it, that the issue of the agreements, because when we were at the Fireblade, we called for that agreement, and generally we did not receive joy, and I thought this level would definitely be able to help us with that particular agreement. And if it's lying at the Department of Home Affairs, it means that it will not be difficult to get it. We'll have to get the department to submit that particular document. Now, if all stakeholders have signed that document, except Home Affairs, is that what I'm hearing?
No, Chair. All parties were party to the discussion and verbally agreed that agreement through in 2015. A committee operational at AXA in Johannesburg called the BCOCC.
Is that correct?
BCOCC, which was the forerunner of the new border management group, and it was verbally agreed in their working committees, and it was adopted. It was not signed at that time.
And that was 2015,
sir.
April 2015.
No, the revised draft, version 2,
of what?
Was forwarded to the Department of Home Affairs on the 4th of April 2018, sir.
Okay. Now, tell me the level of your engagement. Here I hear the Minister of Home Affairs. These other departments, can you, I know under BOCC, you then have the department as I've listed them earlier, but I just for record sake, will you want to confirm which department that you're engaging with for the approval? Can you do that for us?
Of course, Chair.
And then if you do that, please, can you give us the level of the people that we're dealing with, if possible?
Okay, so Chair, just for clarity purposes, my mandate actually taking on the Fireblade project, engaging with government and seeking all the approvals was primarily to engage with every government entity that would be related or involved in a decision-making process regarding the FBO and the movements of passengers at Owatambo International Airport, domestic and international. So from the onset, we engaged with AXA, the airports company of South Africa. They are widely known. They fall under the Department of Transport, and they are the official custodians of all airports in South Africa. So initially we sought guidance from them as to whether this would fall part of their 40-year plan in terms of development going forward. As it turned out, there was always a plan by the airports company to develop on the Donnell side of the airfield a FBO going forward, in so much so that we had to engage with the operational entity, the chief airport planners of AXA, and also the management teams of Owatambo Airport to ensure that whatever we were trying to convey to them as a potential project was well received and fit in with their long-term 40-year development plan. The other entities involved, obviously, were Donnell Industrial Properties. They were, at the time, experiencing a lot of challenges in terms of filling the hangars and premises on the Kempton Park campus. When we engaged with them, they were very positive about it, and so much so they were welcoming this type of project being developed on their side of the airfield.
Chairman, it's worth saying that when we signed the lease agreement with Donnell, they provided us with an option to extend on similar terms our participation with them over all the remaining hangar space they have.
Through initial engagements with Donnell and AXA, we were, in particular the operational teams at AXA, we were then instructed to engage with ATNF, Air Traffic Navigation Services. Obviously, they control all traffic inbound and outbound of Owatambo International Airport. In fact, everywhere in the country, but specific focus on Owatambo. As it's well documented in our court papers, Owatambo is a slot-based airport, which means we have to, from an operational perspective, apply to the Department of Transport for a arrival or departure emanating or departing from Owatambo International Airport. We cannot operate a movement or any movement from Fireblade facility without the approval from DOT and ATNS and AXA.
Sorry, Robbie.
Chair, if I may, there are recorded documents of every 27 approval granted by all the government stakeholders.
Okay.
And they form part of our court papers. I'll actually go through them and list them in detail for you if you'd like.
Okay.
And we're very happy to make a copy thereof and send it through to you as and when.
Okay. Now what we'll do, colleagues, members, is that we have to navigate very, very careful so that we don't deal with matters that are subjugated and expose ourselves and Parliament to that extent, okay? But what is important will be to get information on the appeal side. It's very important for this committee to know, because you make a statement that the appeal now that the minister has lodged, it's an appeal that is no longer much on the court order. I just wanted you to talk to that so that when members begin to engage with you, we are very clear that we don't undermine another sphere of government and having to take decisions on engage on matters that are subdued, right? What is very important for us here was around the agreement, because you'll understand that you are in operation as we speak, and Parliament has a particular interest and responsibility to make sure that wherever the state participate, either through its immigration or health or south or whatever, there must be accountability, and Parliament has to do that way, right? So I think we have to navigate with that understanding, that we are not infringing on anything, we're not undermining the legal processes that are on, but Parliament has a responsibility. And what is coming out is that there is this agreement that is not signed, that is lying at the Department of Home Affairs, which for now you'll call it some kind of a gentleman agreement so far. That's how we'll call it for now, right? Now then the state enters. You see, that's the first danger. Then the state gets exposed to some kind of an arrangement that is not signed for. That becomes a very serious matter. No. Point of order. Point of order. No.
The border agreement with the ANC, not from government. Nikki and his father went to the ANC, they captured the ANC, they are capturing this particular parliament. Yeah, what were they doing in the ANC?
That's the nature of the democracy in the republic. Let's proceed with the engagement, and I think let's go back to the point. But the danger of this protest is when you begin to threaten people, and directly so that becomes a problem because. You not want the situation where we turn Parliament into a state of anarchy, where people are free to express themselves, they have the right to protest, but not to an extent of threatening people. That becomes quite dangerous if that is happening. But on that note, we're going to proceed, because Parliament has work to do. We're going to proceed, and we not much want to say we apologize. I think you now understand that... This is democracy that we have in the country. People come in, express themselves, but really would want to condemn the threat. That as much as people protest, they cannot threaten people, and that then becomes criminal if you do that. And I think, I wanted us to proceed. We can comment maybe at the end of the engagement, because I see that their hands already. Hussein, do you want to comment?
Chair, I'm sorry, and I understand that you are trying to proceed with our agenda, which I really do appreciate. But I do think that we must also not just simply dismiss this incident as a once-off incident and move on. And I want to add my voice to the disgust that this Parliament is an institution where every single South African is welcome to share and air their views openly in a responsible, mature manner. And the conduct by BLF is simply not acceptable. We mustn't forget these are the same people who went and protected the Gupta family.
Okay.
And today they are here to try and lodge a protest. So I really want to add my voice to it, and I call on you, Chair, to make sure that this matter is reported to the Speaker and that the appropriate action is taken against them.
At the end of the meeting, we'll want to make a proper, you know, an engagement and then make our recommendation. And then we'll have to communicate with the Speaker's office on the such matters. Because if we do not have your bouncers available, with my old members of the committee, I was going to be pushed away. But I think it's something that the Honourable Hussain will have to come back to it and reflect. So that it becomes some kind of a rule that Parliament will have to deal with, so that people, when they come and express themselves, they have to do that amicably, with discipline and decorum of Parliament and respect Parliament, you know. It's very important, I think. But let's proceed with the work that is before us, colleagues. I was still at the point of trying to understand the agreement, and I was already making a comment on the agreement that is there and which is not signed, still lying with the Department of Home Affairs. At the same time, the operations are carrying on, right? You're receiving international flights, you get immigration. Maybe as you do that, as members are going to be posing questions, you may want to talk to us of the logistics, therefore, that are put in place with regard to such matters when they happen. Because for now, we now understand that the agreement is at that level. But I wanted you to speak more of the department. You've spoken about AXA. You've spoken about the issue of AXA development, unit. But you're not talking about the SARS and your health and all of these other departments. I just want to have an understanding, because in our engagement in the Fireblade visit, we did interact with officials from this department, especially SARS together with health and this other department, which is Home Affairs, obvious that it's in the arrangement. What we missed to get again was the level of the engagement with these departments. And I like it when you say you deal with them at the level of the BOCC, because that's a structure that is mandated by legislation to deal with such matters as a port of entry. So, because the matter now at the level of Home Affairs is escalated to the level of the minister, I wanted to understand again the levels of these other departments, as how far and what levels have you been dealing with. Okay.
Sorry, Chairman, just before we get there, can I just go back to the Minister's appeal to the Constitutional Court for one moment, which you asked about earlier.
Yes.
And just to make it clear, what the Minister has done is sought to appeal to the Constitutional Court to hear his appeal. So, and the Constitutional Court hasn't opined yet, and no doubt they will apply their minds to it in due course. And they may take two decisions. They may say, there's no merit to this and we won't hear it, or they may say we will indeed hear this and then there will be an argument in front of the Constitutional Court. But that's where we are at the moment. Thank you.
So he has appealed only for him to be heard by the Constitutional Court.
He has
appealed of the judgment.
He has requested the right to appeal.
He's requested the right to appeal.
And Mr. Chairman, I think very importantly, in that request, he has detailed what he is seeking to overturn in the prior judgments. And in the first three cases, he argued that he had not given his approval. In the Constitutional Court application as it stands today, and it is in the public domain, it's a document which is available, therefore I'm not restricted in that regard, he has not included as a condition of his appeal that he did not grant approval. He has accepted he did grant approval.
Okay, that's fine. So it's quite important that we sort of understand the level of our engagement so that we don't find ourselves having to pass and trample into other bodies that are responsible for dealing with appeals and what is there that is being appealed. So on that note, I'm going to allow members.
Chair, I'm sorry to interrupt you again, but can I ask that we deal with just this issue, and it's critical, and I'm glad you raised it, because it determines to what extent we are able
to have the discussion, as you suggested, if the matter is sub judice. Now, if you go, Chair, to this legal opinion we got from Parliament, and at the very last page, it makes it very clear, from what I understand, is that as we are speaking now, there is no application filed before court.
Correct.
And so if we can just get beyond that point, then it means that we have free rein to ask whatever questions we wish.
That's the point. That is why I wanted us to understand if there's appeal has been launched, and because they make it in their statement too, that the issue is no longer the appeal about the order to grant the operation. It's not challenging that, right? That he has accepted, that he has given. Hence, therefore, the point that becomes relevant for us is that what agreements are in place for them to operate. If you have accepted that you're not challenging the order that you have granted them, therefore, you're supposed to have put up systems in place and make sure that by the duration, I'm not sure again for how long you're going to be in the operation in that particular space, it has to be driven by an agreement which is written black and white, not gentleman's agreement. You can't leave that and wait for the constitutional court that will come maybe next year or 2021, you know, and it means that the state will be providing a service which is not agreed upon. It's not signed for, right? So let me allow colleagues then to come in, and I think I'm happy that Parliament has done its work around the issue of the legal opinion that we have received, and then I think we have done an assessment. That application, we have not done an assessment of it, the leave to apply, and this is what we are not told. Because if we are told that the minister's decision is to apply for a permission to put an application, it was something else, right? So here we took it that the information that we're given was that the minister is appealing the decision, right? So now it's a different thing now we are hearing today. So let's proceed, colleagues. Let me allow members. I think what we'll do, you'll note the questions and comments that members will ask, and then you'll then respond, right? So what we do in Parliament, I think you have watched Parliament. Maybe for the first time you come to Parliament. We'll then allow members one by one. Huh? You have not been to Parliament before. Oh, by the way, you are the former Premier in the legislature there. But your legislature was not robust like Parliament. But thank you very much. I think you'll be able to assist. Mamu Damuza, I will start with you, followed by Mamu Kalipi, Honorable Gekana, Honorable Nkomo, Honorable Hussein, and Honorable Finlay, and then Mamu Raputi at the back. We'll take the hands from that line, okay?
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and thank you very much, Mr. Oppenheimer, with the presentation. And I think it's very clear. There are no problems. I mean, we are very clear now from this presentation. But I've got a question on the paragraph 1, 2, 3 from the bottom, where you are saying the minister granted the approval in a meeting, and suddenly when he get back to the office, he overturned unilaterally. So I just want to check if you do have the minutes of that particular meeting, so that the minutes of the 28th January 2016. If you can provide Parliament for those minutes, and then the other issue is on the agreement, lease agreement. I've heard you talking about the period of your lease agreement with Dinel, but how long will it take? Then the last one is about the charges or fees at the airport in terms of other departments. Are you paying the fees or charges by utilizing the staff or personnel of other departments in that regard? I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Well, Chair, when you also wanted to get a clarity in terms of how are we going to proceed, you clarify that this is a follow-up meeting. And then, correctly so, the statement is before us and we need to interrogate the statement because at the end of the day, we need to know what happened. That is our immediate task for this committee because we are also not sure what happened. This matter came before the committee after that court case took place. And then the Committee of Home Affairs said, no, we need an explanation from the department. Hence, the chairperson said that today it's your opportunity to clarify the committee because the department was called and they gave us their vision of the story. So the reason why we are having this meeting today is to get your vision in order for the committee to take a decision moving forward. So, in your statement, if you can bear with me, Chairperson, I just want to make some clarity-seeking question. On paragraph 3, when you said that further research identify underutilized land and facilities within the Denel complex at Oar Tambo, which could be turned into an ideal blah, 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 blah. So I'm interested to go to when, which year was this? Because I can understand that the process started in 2014. So that is number one. And paragraph 1, 2, 3, 4 as well, if I can get a clarity from you, because it's there in black and white, you said that it was clear that the business venture would not be profitable. And now can you clarify this committee, why do you want to embark on a business that is not profitable? And you want to invest something like 150 million on the facility alone. So what is your interest, Gatlegatle? Because I understand as a businessman, I'm sure that you are still on diamond producer. And when and then there's the largest diamond that is produced in the whole world, and you have made your accumulation. And now all of a sudden with your son, because the opening line says, my son and I, you want to embark on a business venture that is not profitable, then that is also raised some question marks. So why would any businessman who's doing very well in their business want to have or to embark on a non-profitable venture? That is one. I think I'm covered by Umam Tambuza when he asked, because when the minister was here in this portfolio committee, he said he didn't approve this thing. We even said that to him, it looked like you have met with these people, Minister, and then you approved this thing because that's what the court is saying. And we also said in your affidavit that it looked like there was a change of heart because Gupta wanted to embark on a similar project. Can you also clarify with us here in this committee, according to your understanding, why the minister was changing? Is because of the Gupta influencing the minister, or what is it? And as well, on my point, Chair, of non-profitable, there are some documents that were sent by the department or by the secretary of the chairperson, whereby I read that the Minister of Finance specifically said that he's not going to support this project because it's not budgeted for, right? And it's not wise to embark on a project when there's no money. And, Chairperson, I remember when we have this issue in front of the committee, and we said as a committee, the minister must appeal. It's us in the committee. We said, please appeal this decision because we also are not taken into confidence. And we understand that, as you also alluding to your affidavit, that this is not true, that it's the only project that is going to be private. You mentioned Kruger National Park, you mentioned Lanseria as well. But our experience is, you said while you're shaking your head that you are no longer in on mining sector, but we know that you have been in the mining sector and you've been getting your money through mining sector, a business. So we know that in other parts of the world also. So rich people like yourself have this kind of project in mining, in farms, whereby we experience some sort of illegal people coming in the country with all sorts of things. So
can you just share with us what is your agenda? I don't believe that it's just an interest with your son. Just you want to run this thing. Even when the minister, according to you, when he's changing his heart, you even take him to court. I think you must be clear and you must be just very frank with us to say, what is it? Why do you want this project by all costs? And just to have this project. Thank you, Chair.
Maybe as you will be responding to this question, especially of the issue of safety and security of the country comes in, it was at some point highly reported that there was some mishap or something illegal that happened at that airport and you sort of blocked whatever package that was about to leave. Can you talk to us about that? I remember, in fact, you just reminded me, a colleague, but you may want to talk about the issues of security. How do you deal with the issue of security, of making sure that both yourself and the clients and the host, meaning that your home affairs, your SARS, everybody that operates there, how do they deal with issues of security and all of that? You may want to talk to us because we're now trying to get deeper into the operation and understand the operation of the place outside the agreement that binds everybody, by the way.
Thanks, Chairperson. It's difficult to serve under you because you ask all the questions.
No.
It's very good at the same time.
That's fine, my brother.
Let me say, Chairperson, thanks very much, man. I'm covered by your questions and my colleagues. Yeah, mine was to ask about the security, as Chairperson has alluded, and how is Fireblade is going to benefit the South Africans and your relationship with all the stakeholders, because I've never heard thoroughly about that. And most importantly, the period of the lease, as it was asked. So I wanted you to be specific when coming to it and to understand lastly, in other departments, the people you were speaking to, specific, just be specific on it, because we were under impression that this thing is going otherwise, but now with the information we have from our own legal team, And the lawyers of the parliament, we found that there's no case, and we were told that it's going to be appealed. So it means that somebody is lying and lying, as the court has said that. And so we can't, but I know that the chairperson will be able to give direction on how we must work on this matter. I thank you.
Yeah, it is me. Okay, that's fine. Let's proceed. I think the point, obvious, will be to have a full understanding, especially when it comes to issues of security. At the level of the airport, you don't deal with ordinary police officer that gets deployed there. You will have to deal with people who are highly trained, even to deal, because you are dealing with international movement of people. You'll then have to deal with people who, some of them are in the wanted list of Interpol, some of them, you know, you have to be very, very clear when it comes to, and I think Honorable Gumede would understand from the security point of view when we deal with matters of security, what we mean generally. I think you understand that. It will be good that you share with us in your operation as a Fireblade with all these other stakeholders. That is why my point earlier was to want to understand at what level are you engaging with, what level are these government officials that you are engaging with. Because you may find that you are just dealing with the director there who's not at the privy of more information around issues of security, issues of immigration, you know, issues of health and all of that, right? So it's important for us to understand that operation, because we are the ones now who are providing a service. They come to support you with all these particular services that the state then provides. And therefore, the point you make is that most of some of these airports, as you have just identified them, ports of interest, your Lanseria, your Kruger, and many others. I'm not sure if there's any agreement with the state, with the Lancera. I think it's a point that members must note it, right? I'm not sure that they even pay for their services when they get such services, because we do have immigration at Lanseria. It's something that we may want the department to come back and clarify us. Same applies with Kruger. We're dealing with most international tourists that goes via Kruger Airport. You want to know again if there's a particular agreement in place. This, for me, it begins to open up a lot of gaps that need to be closed. Without making any conclusion, I think we're just in the beginning of the meeting, but what has been highlighted so far is that there's so much gray areas that are not being dealt with, and the state then provides this service, right? Our interest, obviously, is public money. The APP of the Department of Home Affairs does not have a savings at the fire blade. In the APP, is not there, right? So we may want, as we move forward, because it's a savings that they are providing there. In the APP, is not there. I'm not sure any other departments, again, that in the APP, do they have such, you know, targets that they have with regard to providing a service to the fire blade, you know. So it's going to be around, you know, the issues of the state having to spend money. The government is spending money in a private arrangement, right? So we'll have to deal with that particular area. That's why the point of accountability then comes in, right? Right. We're not putting a blame on you, but we're looking at the role of government now in that level. Honorable Gumede, Mam Kenya will follow, Mam Nkomo, and then we'll say, you're not dealing Mam Raputi. You will be the last to speak after Zinlet. Honorable Gumede.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, it's just a follow-up on the question that has been asked as well, about whether there are any other privately owned such facilities. And my question is, who are the other owners of these facilities, or are they solely owned by the Oppenheimers? That is my question.
Maybe that question, Honorable Gumede, again, it will want government to respond. Especially, you know, your Home Affairs and many other departments that we are dealing with, a private company here. If they know how, they can tell us. It will be helping us, in fact. They can help us, Honorable Gumede. I think if you know some of your friends who are in the same business as you, you may want to share with the community so that we can know they are. You are not reporting to the Parliament, but Parliament, definitely we are going to make a follow-up on the issues that that already have been highlighted, especially the issue of other private airports that are there, and the government does provide the service. We are going to make a follow-up. As long as it has to do with the immigration or home affairs, this portfolio committee is going to make a follow-up on those matters. Okay, thank you, Gumede. I think they will then respond if there's any knowledge of anyone who's doing the same. Mam Kenya?
I've got only one question pertaining to the paragraph 2 from the bottom. Maybe it also relates to what Honorable Mkhape just said. Looking at these percentages, 5% you got as a family and 6% as a family. Do you think really you are really getting something from out of this by the effect of even going to the courts? Secondly, also, now I don't understand, may you please clarify to me what has been happening during, you said you opened the fire plate to open for business in 2014, but then what has been happening from 2014 to 2018? Now I don't understand what has been happening in between those areas, because really what you, I don't know whether what is happening, because even now the numbers are going down, they're talking about 691 in 2018. What has been happening all along, noting that there's also, you don't want to talk about this subject care as much as we are concerned, because that is the national key point. We are concerned about it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mam Nkomo, can you come in?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think my first
statement, Chairperson, just before I ask one or two questions, is to thank the Chair for the welcome which he did the last time I came to the meeting. I didn't actually say anything about that. Thank you very much, Chair.
You're welcome.
Secondly, now coming to the input. You know, Chairperson, the Oppenheimer family is a family which all of us in the townships know about. We've known about them from the time we were little babies. Now I'm surprised that there's still agreements which are made where there isn't any documentation. Where actually you've said, I think you've recorded a lot of the stuff, we can always get that stuff. What type of operations are those? Even if you went to court and won the case, you know, all that, but that's not how business is run. That's not how you do things. You know, where you can actually say, no, we have recordings. You go all the way. You go for agreements. You sign up things. You do things. That's how things are done. And I must state that, like I said, some of us, I come from Soweto in Shaweda, and I do frequent Limpopo and Zululand. I do know the projects which were done by the Oppenheimers over years. I do know them very well. And they've done things thoroughly. But there's something about this particular project. What's in it for the community and what's in it for the Oppenheimers? That is what Mkhalipi asked, Honorable Mkhalipi, earlier on. If the community involvement, as Kekana also said, Honorable Kekana said, if the community was involved, would we be seeing a lot of the dances that we had earlier here? You know, some of us have been ducking and diving even in the House, in Parliament. When there were fights some time back, I think some of you saw it on TV, we had to go underneath our cupboards and all that because we are tired of such type of performances. When is the community involved? When is the community informed about such type of ventures to actually avoid the type of issues which happened? I just need just community involvement. And then lastly, Chairperson, the issues on the charges. One member did ask about the charges. It is of interest that I link up the charges with the three areas which were covered in the media. I think that's when Mr. Oppenheimer was giving us the input. Remember when he said there are those three areas which the media has covered. Honorable Gumede actually asked and said, are the other places also partly owned by the Oppenheimers, the other places, because he said it's not privately, you know, owned. Secondly, the issue of uncontrollable, what is said here, uncontrollable flights. We have a problem in our country, in South Africa, where we have flights that are coming into our country which are not scheduled, where we can even get illegals coming in. We would like to know with surety that this will not happen. Lastly, the last question I would like to ask is that the third area out of the three issues that were covered by the media, it was that this facility is used exclusively by the Oppenheimer family. I think here we need to differentiate between business and family type of use, because if it's business, then it's actually used by everybody. But we need a bit of some clarity on those issues so that we know that this family, which is a South African family, which we know about, is actually operating within, is still operating within the laws and prescripts of our country. Like I said, we do know some of the projects we've done, and we are hoping that you are still keeping to everything as you were doing. Thank you.
It's an applaud at the same time that you are known. Members is confirming that you are known to be doing thorough good business, but with this one, it seems to be losing it. and your public relations does not deal with issues of perception, that your Department of Public Relations is a little bit weak, does not explain to the public on your day-to-day operations, because the colleague puts it that you are a very big, well-known family throughout your businesses, but when it comes to this one, it seems there are issues and you're not communicating proper, hence you saw some of the protests that you saw earlier, maybe it's because of lack of information. You have to speak for yourself. But I think it's a good criticism that you have to note it yourself. Let's move forward. Let me give Honorable Hussein and then followed by Honorable Finland. I still want us to, as you respond, to really deal with your operations. You know, the scheduling of your flights as they arrive, who does what at the point of arrival of a plane. That is very important. I think we must not miss that plane, so that Parliament is satisfied that all these role players who are supposed to be playing their role when a flight has landed or is about to land or is still coming, the scheduling, which the colleague is now raising. How do you deal with such matters? I know they are very detailed. Maybe it may not be at your level, but if you have an operational manager there, you'll have to talk to us about such matters. Honourable Singh.
Chair, thank you very much. With your permission, I would like to perhaps make a comment before I raise just two or three questions. And I simply want to say this, Chair. I think when I switch on the television a couple of days ago, I see our president hosting what I thought was a step in the right direction, and I'm referring to the investment summit. I think if we want us as a country to be able to pull ourselves out of some of the situations, the difficult situations that we're in, as a government, as a parliament, we want to be able to show that we genuinely and positively want to encourage people to invest in our country. Whether it is local South Africans or international South Africans, but regardless of what we do, I think if we put that at the forefront of everything we do, to some degree, I think we'll be able to help to fix some of the problems that we have in our country in terms of unemployment and poverty and so on. But having said that, what we also don't want to see as a parliament, and I recognize this, the sensitivity that all of us have, is that no person, regardless of how wealthy they might be, may use that power, that money, and that influence to get any preferential treatment given what is currently going on in the Gupta environment, if I can put it that way. Essentially what I'm saying is that our sensitivity to this whole thing is to try and get some sense of comfort that the Oppenheimer family, who is very influential and in the country and wealthy for your own benefits, that you have not used that influence and that power much in the same way as the Gupta family has done, and I don't mean to draw the comparison, but I'm referring to the principle, and I'm not drawing the comparison. So on that point, I'd like to hear from you, Mr. Oppenheimer, what your thoughts are on that, and that you can give us as a parliament a sense of comfort that everything that you've done in terms of establishing Fireblade as an FBO has been done 100% out of our board without any influence whatsoever on any government official or a politician. And perhaps that would give you an opportunity to be able to put our minds at ease that what you're doing is the right thing and that Parliament and government can support you to do the right thing. The second thing I want to deal with, Chair, is having read all of the court judgments, and I'm not going to go into the detail, I think much of it is known to some of us. From what I pick up is at the center of the tussle between the Oppenheimer family of Fireblade and Minister Gigaba is the discussion of a meeting on the 28th of January 2016. So everything else is peripheral stuff, but the 28th of January is the center of the tussle. We know now that the court says that the minister had lied, and in fact I'll deal with it later about some of the things that the court has said. In fact, I think the court ran out of adjectives to describe the manner in which the minister had lied. But having read your court papers, I don't feel a sense of comfort that you went into the actual detail of what transpired at that meeting. You've covered some of it. So if you don't mind, to please share with us exactly what happened at that meeting with Minister Gigaba on the 28th of January, and what is it that made you feel that he had given you the approval to proceed. I see your letter 2 days later, Mr. Oppenheimer, that you wrote to Minister Gigaba thanking him for that meeting. But even in that letter, you don't refer to the actual details. The one detail which is of interest is that Minister Gigaba offered or suggested that the then President Jacob Zuma open the facility. So if you could just go into that detail, because that will help us to give us a sense of whether or not there was a genuine interest from Minister Gigaba for this facility to proceed. Excuse me. Mr. Oppenheimer, there's a correspondence that Minister Gigaba had sent to you. And if you don't recall it, I understand you might not have it in front of you. But it's dated 27th of October 2016, and he refers to, he's responding to a letter that that you had sent to him. And I'm just going to read the part that he refers to. He says, I have noted in one of your correspondence to myself dated 14th of October, you say that Donnell's objection herein is spurious and baseless in the extreme, driven by sinister and ulterior motives. I'm not sure if you remember that correspondence, but you probably will, because I think it's a significant part, which brings me to the issue of Donnell. I understand that at some point, although you had engaged and signed a lease agreement with Donnell, for some strange reason, they later on withdrew the lease agreement, and if my understanding is correct. And you then decided to take that matter also to court. If you can maybe just give us an update of where is that court case with Donnell, the first question related to Donnell, and if you can expand on what those ulterior and sinister motives that you refer to in the correspondence, you don't give that detail.
Okay.
I think I'm done. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
We're not opening you back to the court again, right? But these are clarities that members of the committee may want, because these are open documents that are in the public domain, right? All the letters that the Honorable Hussein make mention of are in the public domain. So you just feel free to deal with such matters. And then what we now know is that we have a free to engage on this information that is before us, right? There's nothing much that is subdued, that they will be worried much that we don't have to say so, because the issue of granting is not being challenged. Okay, it's on the basis of what we are saying under oath, and that's the information that we'll have to help members of the committee again to get a copy of that particular document on the appeal by the minister to the Constitutional Court. We'll have to get, I think it's a public document now. We must get that copy, because moving forward, we're still going to do further engagement around this particular area. Mr. Finland, you can come. I think you have noted more questions, right? You have noted questions.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Yes.
I don't think I'm going to have lots of questions, but I've got the interest of finding.
Speak to the mic and then. Yeah.
I've got the interest of finding when you do business and you don't want to get profit. What was your aim? And secondly, in your business, do you have partnership with South Africans, the business people from South Africa, if you've got partnership with them? The last issue, Chair, I see that you started this negotiation in 2012 for this project. Then who was the minister at that time? Because I think Malusi Gigaba only started in 2014, if I'm not mistaken. Minister Naledi Pandor was there at that time. How was the relationship with then that minister? And did she approve of this project? And why Minister Gigaba, in your opinion, why is he against Fireblade? Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable, But I think we didn't. All of you are South Africans, eh?
No.
All South Africans. Okay, not as much as I know you. South African. The accent maybe the accent of the queen there or the king somewhere in the Shanganland, whatever. But these are all South Africans. Okay, that's fine. That's fine. You'll explain yourself again because I see I'm referring direct to Comrade Manis here. Now, but I know that is a businessman, is no longer holding any public office anymore. So I think maybe as we proceed further, we may want to hear how you structured yourself and all of that. The point I think that he was trying to put Finland directly will be around the issues of a BEE compliant again at the same time to make sure that those who are disadvantaged are able to be given an opportunity to run the fireblade too. If it's honorable, you're still honorable till today, by the way. It can't change. If honorable money is part of that, then we'll get to know. Mamra put you on the floor. That will be the last question for now. Then we're going to allow your responses. And then Mam Kenya wants to make the last follow-up. We're going to allow you to make your responses again. Don't forget, they may be tempting. You are still under oath, right? Don't forget that part. But I don't want you to end up saying things that you're not supposed to say them. And tomorrow that can be used against you again. That's fine. Mamu, Mam Raput.
Ntate Niki, Ntate Jonathan, Oppenheimer. I'm so pleased to be with you here today. As Mamu Koma have already said that you are really non-family. Non-family, I think, from the Kimberley, where there is a tourist attraction, which some of us environmental activists, we say that it's not a tourist attraction. That is a hole of shame, especially when you see such poverty in South Africa. And I was just wanted to ask what really motivated you to seek to have the fireblade. And I'm happy that I was not part of the delegation, by the way, but I said that I want to go and see what is happening there at O.R. Tambo. And I asked myself a lot of questions. You know, I didn't even go around. And I said that this fireblade is just for this thing. One family, one family only. And I don't think that is a mistake when we see those young people so frustrated coming and to scream. I form part of those young people. That one family, being serviced. Chaperson.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, because we clearly we
know. No, I talked to the table to clarify certain matters. Because what we are dealing with, I think we have received the presentation. And we are guided by the presentation.
Yeah, but I want to say what was my observation
there
at O.R. Tambo, the fireblade. And the question that came to me, I saw the state servicing the Oppenheimer family. Even if you have written some, you know, the statement here, the full fairness, even if there is a judgment that came, we should rule. We must also take a decision that fireblade cannot save this only one family. It is really not fair. It's painful. And if you can read, just go to a statement on paragraph 4. Paragraph 4, line 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That 150 million, is it yearly or is it monthly? And I think really, for a family as rich as yourself, even if it's 150, 150 a month, it's not enough. But I just wanted to get clarity on that. Is there any fairness in that? But I think that the operator, that the Nikki and Jonathan will answer us. I thank you.
The points that you make, Mama, what is important is that we must go through the reports, colleagues. The committee has made the reports of its finding in the fire blade, and I think this is what must guide us. And at the same time, we have to be engaged with the statement that has been presented. So I don't want to bring in things that are outside our scope of engagement and making insinuations of things that are not there. Let's try and stick to our points as we proceed. I think the whole money, I know that you're from Kimberley too. You'll talk and tell us about the whole in Kimberley, please. Mamo Kenye?
Thank you, Jefferson. I just want to add on my question the issue of when I look at the two paragraphs on the first page of the statement. When I understand this engagement with the minister, only on the early part of 2016. But when you look down there and then you say that we have been granted a final approval then, on that day in the offices. But when you go down there, you talk about multiple engagements with the Home Affairs. As much as you said that your approval was not, the Home Affairs failed to honor the approval. But after that, there's a sense that talks to multiple engagements with Home Affairs that you resorted to go to the courts reluctantly. Now, may you please elaborate to us where are the other engagements? Because according to this document, you have only one engagement with Honourable Minister. But you're talking about now multiple engagements that made you to resort to the courts. Just carry it on that, because you don't see those multiple engagements with Home Affairs in this document. Thank you, Chairperson.
With responses. I don't know how you have structured who's going to answer which question.
Chairman, maybe I could start and then the others take over. And what I'd like to talk about, and it covers a number of the questions that have been raised here, is to go through my memory of what happened at the meeting with the minister on the 28th of January, and that led to his granting us approval. As I say, that was a meeting that I was invited to by Minister Gagaba, and I was accompanied by Robbie Irons at the end of the table there, and another person who works with us called Bruce Tillam. It was an extremely cordial, friendly, and positive meeting taking place in the Home Affairs offices in Pretoria. And almost the first thing the minister said was that he was delighted to be able to tell us that he had indeed granted his approval, and he had signed a letter to that effect, and that letter he would keep but would be delivered to us as soon as the necessary operating practices were agreed. And there was then some discussion between Robbie Irons and Jackie McKay of the Home Affairs about how long that would take, and the general feeling was that it would take about a week to approve those minutes. Following the meeting, as you rightly said, I wrote a letter to the minister thanking him for granting us this permission, and took him up on his suggestion that we should approach then President Zuma to formally open the facility. And he was also keen that at the time there was some idea of a VIP type of clearance for people, and the minister was keen that this should be trialed at Farblade as well for that process. You asked about minutes. We, on our side, did indeed produce minutes of the meeting, which we were sent to the Ministry of Home Affairs for their comments. They acknowledged receipt of those minutes and made no comments. Minister Gagaba, in the court case, tried to suggest that he had never received those minutes, but we were able to produce a message of acknowledgement of receiving of those minutes. Now, did they approve the minutes? No, they did not approve the minutes, but did they take up the opportunity to correct them or produce their own record of the meeting? Absolutely not. What happened thereafter? Well, I'm not sure what happened thereafter, but the minister then changed his mind. I should step back one. There was, following this meeting, then a series of engagements between Jackie McKay and other people in Home Affairs and Robbie Irons about formalizing the operating procedures, and everything that went there suggested that this indeed, as the minister had said, was a done deal. But then, as the minister said, receiving a letter from Donnell, attempted to renege on his agreement. This led in due course to the various court actions. And I must say, we were astounded in the court actions when the minister attempted to argue that he had never given permission. And as you heard in our short thing, and as you would see if you read the court judgments, all three courts also were astounded that he took this argument. And maybe here I should just raise one point, because which is important. I've taken an oath this morning to tell the whole truth, nothing but the truth, and I'm standing by that agreement. The minister came and stood before you in May, took the same oath, I would imagine, and undertook to tell this committee the whole truth and nothing but the truth. And looking at the minutes, one of the things the minister said was that nobody can infer the approval on the basis of a leaked internal memo. Bribery must have taken place, as the only way the Oppenheimers could get an internal memo was through bribery. What the minister was referring to was a document where, in the minister's handwriting, in his own handwriting, is written, must inform, he actually says Anglo, that means Farblade, that the approval I granted must be terminated, and MG signed against that. That document is part of the submission attached to the affidavits admitted by the minister himself. So the minister lied to this committee, and I actually take offense that he suggested we bribed somebody or stole a document. I find that very offensive, particularly as I am, he, under oath in this situation. And so we went to court, as you say, the courts gave their opinion. I think we would be only too happy to either produce for this committee a full record of all the court opinions, or provide you with a link to which way you could be able to access them, because they are in the public domain, available to anybody who wants to see them. And as you say, you studied them carefully and you have read the various things that the judges had to say. I think that covers what happened at the meeting, and what led to Donnell changing its mind from being extraordinarily supportive when we started this process to suddenly becoming very difficult. I have no idea, but something happened, and I don't know what it was. Jonathan, you old Manny?
Thank you. I think my father has very accurately described the moment of the approval. It would seem to me, sir, Mr. Chairman, honourable members, that a brief reprise of the journey from 2012 to today is a very effective way of addressing many of the questions that have been asked. And before we even commenced the idea of Fireblade, and as my father said in his statement, we applied our minds to whether we thought this could be a successful business. And what you have to understand is Nicky and I, my father and I, are both very passionate South Africans and also very passionate about the aviation space. So when we looked at the business plan, it was not our intention to lose any money. It was our intention to make money. But
But not as in a business venture to buy a steelworks or a manufacturing plant and make T-shirts, which has its primary purpose to make money. Our purpose here was to enter into a business which made money, and I will come back to why it hasn't made money and why we say it's been loss-making. And it also implies our thinking from the very beginning. But we entered into a process to make money and to provide, very importantly, a gateway into South Africa and a service for South Africa, because we really do believe that South Africa needs to be able to market itself and sell itself in a very spectacular way. And in another part of our lives, we have a conservancy, a nature conservancy, which is considered one of the best here in South Africa. And certainly when we spoke to the guests who visited that, the idea of a high-quality commercial gateway which addressed their needs was something that they seemed very attracted to. So there was purpose in this business. In 2012, we had, as a family, had a long relationship with Anglo-American, who had operated aircraft at OR Tambo for many years, and they were indicating that they intended to potentially close their businesses. So the home of our flying activities was going to go away. We thought that we could find new facilities, and we started that investigation. We spoke to all the stakeholders, including Naledi Pandor, who was Minister of Home Affairs at the time, and we discussed what we could have done. If this were exclusively for domestic use only, the design of the facilities would have been dramatically different. And during that process, starting in 2012 and running through to when we signed the lease agreement towards the end of 2013, so it was the better part of 12 to 15 months of discussions with various stakeholders, we talked about the need to have international movements, and we have also been very open in the business model of Fireblade is effectively a big petrol station. It might sound kind of crass, but the reality is the money that we make is from selling fuel. And the very sad thing is domestic flying doesn't use a lot of fuel. It uses smaller airplanes that need less fuel. International flying, bigger airplanes, more fuel. It's as simple as that. And so built into our business model from the very, very beginning was something like 30 to 50 international movements a month, escalating over time to a point where we could sell 1 million liters of fuel a month at Fireblade. As we sit today, Mr. Chairman, we're selling on average about 300,000 liters of fuel. So we have a shortfall of 700,000 liters. Many of those liters were intended to come from international travel. We then put forward to ourselves, we have a process whereby we look at these activities, to your point, to make money. And we produced a business plan which showed that over the life of the plan, and the life of the plan, the lease agreement that we entered into with Danel was for 10 years with a renewable right to a further 10 years, so 20 years. We looked at an investment of just under 150 million rand, and we thought that we would make, if we were lucky, 15 to 20 million rand a year out of Fireblade, the facilities. So we would recoup our capital over 7 years, and we would make money for the ensuing years. That was the business plan. So there was real intent for a commercial enterprise. There were many, many discussions through this entire process. We had engaged with, I can't remember how many ministries, stakeholders and the likes. And to the point about agreements being written, yes, in an ideal world it is possible to write detailed agreements. But the world is not a constant and static place. It constantly changes, ma'am, I'm afraid. And so we had a constant dialogue with the people we were working with. We commenced construction in December of 2013. We built the new terminal. Many of you have seen that during the course of the first half of 2014. And we opened what we called a soft opening in August of 2014, and we had our hard opening for domestic flights only, and that's the important thing, for domestic flights only in September of 2014. In so much as I flew internationally at that time, I left from the normal, the commercial side of OR Tambo. If I flew down here to Cape Town, I would have left from Fireblade. And that is how all international movements were handled until 2018, when we got the approval to have international movements. So there was a very clear process. Can I jump back to 2013? When we approved the business plan and approved the expenditure of 150 million rand to build the terminal, we had every expectation, because every single conversation we'd had with government departments, that immigration, customs and immigration, would be forthcoming shortly after our opening. And we had anticipated a three-month delay in that process. And for 3 months, we could afford to carry the losses of only operating domestically. I think a proof point of that is that the international facilities at Fireblade, in their own sterile area, were designed and signed off and approved by all the various government stakeholders who use them. I think that's important. They were signed off and approved during the course of 2013, so that when they were built to their specifications. So there were officers that Port Health had signed off on. There were officers that Home Affairs had signed off on. There were officers of Revenue Services that had been signed off on. There had been officers for the police that had been signed off on. And, I mean, not in our business plan and costing of us about 2.5 million rand, was a sterile holding area, which we built in 2013, for those people that the South African authorities deemed inappropriate to come into the country, so that they could be held in what's called airside, in the aviation on the international side of the airport, until they could be repatriated out of South Africa at our facilities. And those too were signed off by all the various authorities. So to your point about an expectation, everyone we had spoken to had said this is something we want. Everyone we had spoken to said this is great. Everyone had participated in the design. And so when we built the terminal in 2013, we really anticipated that we would open in 2014, we would run domestic operations, sort out all the niggles that would naturally happen when you start, and then international arrivals would occur sometime during 2014. And many times, and here Robbie was, Mr. Irons was really at the core of these conversations, we were promised next week, next month, 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now. And these conversations kept on happening, and we would come back to government and say to the various departments, what other things are now the issue? And we would discuss, we would resolve, and we would then go back and resolve, and we reinvested and reinvested. So a case in point, for those who visited the terminal, the international area has a quarantine zone between the outside entrance and the inside entrance. That was not originally there. There was a change in regulations or a change in interpretation of regulations as personnel changed, and they said, no, we need the sterile zone so that people can't have a direct interaction with the international zone. And because we anticipated operations literally in the next couple of weeks, we moved the builders in and we built the sterile zone, and so on and so forth. And this really is something that happened ongoing through the period 2014 from our opening through to, at a level of frustration, the meeting with Minister Gagaba in January of 2016, where we finally had received the final approval and the minister said he'd signed the letter. So it was very easy from that point to say, okay guys, let's go. And again, this no, not just yet, we need to do some more work and everything else. And by the middle of the year, frankly, our patience after being in this process for 4 years was ultimately frustrated. In terms of the commercial nature of this, apologies, sir, in terms of the nature of this, it was never intended for Fireblade to be exclusively or even conceivably exclusively for the Oppenheimer family. It was intended to be a gateway for South Africa, to be a high-quality, superior product, as is offered pretty much elsewhere in the world. And we have globally about 10,000 other such facilities at international airports worldwide, and they all endeavor, I would like to think we offer a better one, but they all endeavor to offer similar sorts of services. And the numbers, for me, support that. So just for, in terms of clarity, in terms of the numbers, my father's statement states that since inception, including domestic and international operations, we have had some, let me try and find the number, 13,884 movements. The vast majority of those have been domestic movements, and those have, the family itself has been responsible for 5% of those movements. So by no means an exclusive use institution. 95% of movements through Fireblade have not been for the family. And then since we started international operations this year, we've had 691 movements, of which 6% have been family movements. So again, by no means exclusive use for the family. 94% of movements have been supporting tourism, business, non-state actors, state actors, through the facility. And I think that really concludes that part. The one piece that I do think I need to mention is prior to Fireblade's inception, and it's not, aviation in this particular space is not a huge employer, we have endeavored to not only create a number of jobs, and at the moment Fireblade employs 52 people, many of whom we take the opportunity to extend training to, so not in the terminal space, but we have two young pilot candidates who are qualified as commercial pilots but are progressing towards becoming airline pilots who we support and fly for our organization. We continue to try and drive outreach programs using Fireblade as an opportunity to do business. We are trying to arrange a number of school trips to come and excite people about aviation. And as we are learning, and we just saw, for example, Comair withdrawing from the South African Airways technical agreement, there is a dearth of quality skills in our country. We're very lucky in that we've recruited and are able to retain, because they like the working environment, some exceptional engineering talent who look after our aeroplanes. And I would like to think that the reports that we get from our passengers passing through the facility, which rank it alongside the best in the world, is proof positive that the people who are providing that service enjoy their jobs, enjoy the work that they're doing, and really take enormous pride in both advertising South Africa and what it means to be part of the Oppenheimer family. So, Mr. Chairman, I think that addresses about 80% of the questions. There are a couple of more specific, smaller questions. But the one point that we haven't addressed yet is Manny. And I think, I mean, Manny, we've known each other, what, 20-plus years now? And you've been a business partner of ours in many ventures, and most particularly in this venture from prior to its inception. So, I mean, do you want to just mention something about that? Well,
sorry, just before Manny talks, and just to reinforce what Jonathan said, as I said, Manny's, I've known Manny from the days when he was a shop steward, which when we weren't in partnership. But we have been in partnership for a long time. And when it came to find partners for this business, Manny was the absolutely right and logical person. And I have never viewed him as our BEE partner.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll just touch a few points and noting the point we've raised, which the Honourable must also want to touch on, Robbie. Robbie will deal with the scheduling. We want to assist this committee because you need to, you owe it to South Africans. to clear all these matters which are all hanging around. And that's why we stand in front of you to tell you the truth and only the truth. In that regard, I want to say that I've been involved from the inception, the thinking, and so on. You all know that when I left this honorable house, I was a member of the National Assembly, serving the president by then as a parliamentary councillor. That's up to starting from 2014. Now, say, 2004, when I left 10 years as a premier, and I came to work here in Cape Town, and I actually also headed the ANC elections. But immediately after that, I realized the stamina is no more there. When I was running around Viva and Amandla, and I joined the place I come from. As I know the family when I was still an employee at DPS after finishing matric, 1980. I started to work for the company. His dad was still in charge of the family. When I became a premier, his dad was still the chairman, Harry Oppenheimer of DPS and Anglo-American, and we continued to build the new mine, even in Kimberley. When I'm about to retire from Madiba, asked me, where do you want to go? I said, I'm going back to mining. That's the reality, that I know nothing outside of mining. And indeed, I joined the family after speaking to them, Jonathan and the dad. I said, I now want to go back where I am really useful. And I joined the family. We did the DBS deal as empowerment. From there on, all sorts of deals, we continue to stay as true partners. I'm not a BE to them. We've been dealing a number of things. And they are not in the public space in terms of investments. I will say to you, they've been very modest today without blowing any trumpet. If Jonathan had to speak because he's running the project, in 3 months' time before the president spoke about new investments, they put me just above $1 billion in 3 months. $1 billion on a new project in pharmaceutical. Two projects. And I'm just saying,
it's health. It's
health. But I'm saying to you, it's the reality. If we are going to do and join our president in terms of investments, I take it that we all have to do the right thing, as the president has said. We must tell those who are South Africans who still have a confidence in this country, whatever the difficulties and the black t-shirts running up and down, we still have confidence. We'll move on to create, because we know our people need it. But before I get into a political speech, I must come now to the real issues. To say that in my participation in this regard, I had to learn a lot about aviation, and I think that from the onset in 2012, the first time we met is Naledi Pandor and the DG for life there, called Apleni. We met him also there. We then came and gave them a document to say, this is our ideas, how do you direct us to go? That's why I say on the research, it was you go back and engage multiple type of people, Department of Transport, Department of Home Affairs, and so on, all of them, including their subsidiaries, Access and so on, DNL. That's what we did. It was a directive. Follow this, I cannot give approval until. And Fireblade had to go that route, even up to the domestic, that you will get customs and immigration. That was the model, because domestic alone, we are not going to make it profitable. That's why customs. And they said, build it, we are with you. They changed the specifications, extra money. They said the health said, no, we want the Ebola scan, buy it. We had to buy it. The police said, we want a nice comfy five-star for the dog outside. Build the five-star for the dog. Our dogs are five-star people. We have to build all that. The other police came with big, nice thing for the guns and everything and so on. Others from correctional services said, we need people who need to be helped if they are not coming in. The police said, build a place where we can keep them not to come in, because there are not people allowed to come to South. So all that came because of their specifications. We did that, they took over, they actually put the computers in. And that was all we were led into this thing, this dying, sealed, and so on, up to the BACC actually accepted everything done, signed, and we all got into operational discussions and so on. So that's how we're led, and that's why it was ready at the time. That's why Nikki said, what do we do? I said, no, let's not proceed to fight with government. Let's go again and engage. We engaged with the minister. We engaged with his people, and from there on they ran away, and we had no other option. I want to say to you that indeed, Dineo, there was a change in Dineo's leadership on a particular type of end of the year. In January, you must just check what happened on January, December to 2015 and so. Change of leadership. Dineo being so supportive because they were landlord and so wanted revenue. We paid them nearly $1 million rent per month to keep that thing going and so on. The change of mind, no more. They had all of a sudden, the minister calls us and said that's an objection from Dineo. They never spoke to us. We sit with them here and so on. When we arrived there, there's a funny letter. They said this, and we said, no. Can you produce proof? No proof. But the minister said Dineo have got an objection. And clearly we had to go forward to say, come and produce. That's how we went to court to actually push them. And their case fell flat. No, it's not. But go back to that structure of the board which was included. Very interesting read, because even the legal advisor of the Minister of Home Affairs was part of the board of Dineo. So without saying anything, we could see something is going wrong between Dineo and Home Affairs. What's happening here? The people who are dealing with us of Home Affairs stood back. We're no more engaging. There's something else at the minister level. They are afraid. And we have accepted that. But I want to deal with the last important point on my side, because it's very important if we don't deal with it. Honourable members, we say the minister did approve in his own handwriting the affidavit. The things he said we stole or we brought and came in his affidavit in his own handwriting. That's what the court read from his affidavit. It was a hurting thing when I saw, and I saw a comrade of mine going that route. Not only a comrade, when he has to come in here and still not stick to the truth which the court has actually satisfied themselves, and a high court. If I stand here, I come from prison for 5 years. I know when I take that oath, it is real. You must not come in lie. And it's unfortunate. This matter continues. And I appeal to you, Chair. He needs to be assisted. There was approval, finish, and trust. I don't want, and the court is not even appealing to that. And I just want to say, he needs to be assisted, and we are the best people to assist him, so that we can all go together as South Africans. It's an appeal, because I love anybody here, I love my ministers, I love everybody. I've never gone to even go on a confrontation with him. I stood back. I said, let's go to follow the procedures. And I think the other matter which colleagues of other members have raised is the finance minister. That time it was Remini was the minister 2015, and he then put an objection to the chairman that they see the project, because the Minister of Home Affairs wrote to him, we are about to approve, all other departments have approved. And are you happy to support? And the SARS went to him and he said, where do you find the money? And the minister said, there will be a shortfall here. I will not be able to service you with the personnel which will have to service Fire Blades. And he put that objection. When we engaged with the minister, said, it's a treasury matter. I did take the opportunity through the board directive to engage the minister. To that extent, out of that meeting with the minister, it was that we are prepared to pay. Give us the charges, how much do you need, because it's not in the budget now. MTM program, as you go for 3 years, we are prepared to sign on the dotted line to support it 3 years, to support that budget for the people who service us. And on that note, we've got our chairman is writing a letter to say we give undertaking to pay for those costs which are reasonable and so on, for the type of minimum type of service, because it's not a daily type of movement. That's what happened, and on the basis of that, we removed the objection, and that's how the minister came back to say he now agrees, and that is all in the documents which we gave to court. So that matter was dealt with. The last matter, finally, is the mishap which happened at Fireblade, as you have raised. It's an operational matter, but it's also hurting because all within the AXA precinct, it's AXA precinct. They dictate what happens there. It's not actually denial. And when we have to get service providers, the first port of call is AXA. Are they accredited in AXA premises to do service? And that's how the leadership from the CEO of AXA had to guide us to say, people who are here should be accredited by us. That's why the director for the security, which was in AXA already, which were permitted and accredited. That's how they got involved. So we are very clear in those operations. Not our security coming from outside. It's all the security. The police of South Africa is independent, and the AXA security on the premises is from which the ones we took. And when a particular plane came, and people were having to get to leave from Fireblade Airport, they come with their things, and they were going through the security. And when they were going through the security, the bills went up. Clean, 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 clean. The box could not finish to pass. And Mr. Chaps, security said, you open what is here because it's not allowed. That's aviation law. These are the rules. You open, want to see what is it, and so on. That is what is expected from you. Calls stood outside, calls refused to open, took the box away, and ran out with it. The plane had to leave without them. The point we are making, we have to report that in terms of aviation, what is expected from us on security. We did exactly that. Immediately, with all the scanners report, we reported to the right authorities, crime intelligence, whoever, state security, and so on. That's the report you act. Doesn't matter where we left. In any way, we took action, and the chairman wrote a letter to that company, saying, never again to put your foot here, because we do business in a correct way. It's the very way I would not have joined the Oppenheimer family if I did not know them from the very grandfather of Jonathan, that they do business straight, and if they miss it, they own it, if there's anything wrong. And we want to stand in front of you that we acted, and it was in the good interest of South Africans. We will continue to build Fireblade. We had, if you did not know, lots of people from Soweto all over were full there. The other day when the World Cup was rolling throughout the world, and they had to bring South Africa because they sent a big team to come and check the premises in South Africa. Where is it safe? Because this cup was stolen before in these places. Big gold. And we decided that it should be Fireblade. And all the vuvuzelas, it was so full that those members were there, occupying the home. And it was very nice because that's important. They could leave with that cup again from there straight to Russia. And that's why you could see wonderful soccer. Without that, it could have disappeared in the Ikululeni area. People are very difficult here. But we support the business part of it. I want to thank you, Chair, and I think that Robin will do the final thing just to give you.
So the point that you dealt with, the security points and the attempt to smuggle things out, obviously you have spoken generally. You do not want to be specific. I hear you saying that we are wrong to the company. Would you just share with us, in brief, Jan Pazic, which company was that?
Chairman, with your permission, it was an entity belonging to the Guptas.
Okay, no, thank you.
It was their plane.
Okay, thank you very much. It was publicly reported, that one. No, that's fine, thank you very much. And that's why the point we are making is that we may not even want to begin to compare. Here we are dealing with the company. We have invited them, they have responded, they are here. Let's just deal with them only and don't bring other people. But it was important just for that clarity. Can we proceed with responses, please? We're not done yet.
Mr. Chairman, I'm trying to capture with all the questions that were asked. I think Manny has dealt eloquently with the incident of efforts to move things through Fireblade Security.
which I was very pleased operated. Just as a matter of clarity, the family ceased to have any exposure in the mining industry other than through sort of small shares that are in other things in 2012. So we exited the mining business in 2012.
Well, what you're dealing with today, you're dealing with the company.
Is that the company
called the Firebird?
Okay, I'm just saying that
even ourselves, let's try and avoid the family issue because we are dealing with a company called Fireblade.
Thank you, sir.
And that company has directors.
Correct.
And before us today, we have these directors before us today.
Correct. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
And
I think Robbie can talk to the procedures of moving aeroplanes. Uncontrolled flights into Fireblade. I think, Robbie, do you want to have another go at that?
Do that, Robbie. There's a point that Mr. DeBigger has raised, the issue of payment. You said you have made an arrangement to make a payment. Can you talk about that payment? What is it that you are paying for? Because part of what we're trying to establish here is that the state does provide the service. Meaning that when I talk state, I talk government departments. And then different government departments, in fact, they perform services at the Fireblade, health, agriculture, home affairs, SARS, and all of that, right? Now, what is it that you are paying for? Maybe you want to talk to us about that arrangement for making payment for 3 years, and then what is going to happen after 3 years? Is it covered in the agreement that after 3 years, this work will then happen? But in principle, I think you have noted that there are other service providers of your nature who are more privately, like the Lanceria and the Kruger, who we don't know if they are paying any service currently to the state, and they are provided by the state, by the way, the state does provide services to them, of immigration and many other, because they deal with international movement of people. So it's a point that I said earlier, we'll note it. Moving forward, we want to get clarity around that. I know that it was not meant for you to expose them, but in line of question by members, they did ask if you know any of the service provider that you know of your nature that you can share with the Committee of Parliament. Being South Africans, by the way, loyal citizens of the country, you may want to share that. If you don't know, then that's fine. We'll proceed doing our work as a committee to dig deeper into this particular arrangement. Again, as you engage with us, have you come across any legislative framework in the area of operation? I would know that you do have quite a number of capacity when it comes to legal capacity. Have you come across any legislation other than the immigration law that in fact gives rise to the role of Home Affairs in that arrangement? Have you come across anything? Because part of the exercise that you're engaging in is to again identify any gaps in the law, because these are private arrangements that are there and the state does provide the service. You definitely want to have some kind of a legislative framework in place, a policy framework in place that guides us. Because you have a gentleman's agreement here and it's not even driven from the level of legislation or policy of government, right? So we want to, that's why further engagement with the department will be around these issues that wants to make sure that they are in place, because you can't offer, it's not a banana republic, I mean, where you just wake up in the morning and the plane can land and go. You said, no, we have agreed on that. We have a constitutional state and there are laws that govern that. When it comes to public money and the service, there must be accountability. Everyone that receives a service or everyone that the state provides a service for, the state will have to account for. There is immigration officers that goes and provide a service there. There must be accountability. If it happens that one of them died on the way, or when is there is shot at, or whatever that happened, the state takes the responsibility, right? The state pays the salary of this person every month to provide the service, okay? So these are some of the gaps that, as we move forward, we are free to really identify them, highlight them, help the Parliament Committee to really look and try and address some of the gaps that you yourself will have identified, okay? And here we are dealing with South Africans here. I'm not dealing with the people who, when we wanted them to appear, some of them wanted us to book them business class ticket
and get them interpreters, Hindu interpreters, at the cost of the public, when they've made so much money out of the public purse, fraudulently so, you know. So these are some of the things that, you know, as we deal with these matters, we must pride ourselves as South Africans sometimes, but we have been taken for granted. That is why the issue of the box that was tried to be smuggled out of the airport and the report was given. Parliament will have a particular interest. We want to know what happened to that investigation, if there was any. And we have noted that point. We want to get those who are responsible to give us a report on such matters. Okay, you can proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In terms of... you've somewhat distracted me.
Right to do that. It's up to you to compose yourself and come back again.
Another question that was asked, sir, was do we have interest in any other aviation businesses in South Africa? And the answer to that is no. Fireblade is two parts. Fireblade in the first part is the terminal business, which you saw the facilities themselves. We also have an aviation business which is available for third-party charter, so it supports anyone who would like to charter it directly or indirectly. So we don't have any further interest. In terms of these privately owned entities, so I think you're right. We entered into a three-year agreement to provide reasonable services, and with the Department of Home Affairs being the umbrella and coordinating body of these, we looked to them to indicate a number that we should pay, and we pay a monthly fee to them at this stage. One? Which is 117,000 rand a month, sir. And that is in line with the agreement that we entered into to effectively provide budgetary support for the 3 years while these issues were worked through.
Is that agreement separate from the one that... Is this a separate agreement?
It's
or is it the same agreement that is not signed?
Chair, if I may interject here.
That's right.
The MOU, which has been developed by the DG of Home Affairs and his new appointed BMA structure, were correct. So if I can just take a step back, the BCOCC used to be the border coordinating committee that regulated all border movements within South Africa. Whether it be land, sea or air, they would have total oversight of operationally every port within the country. The BCOCC, as I understand it, has subsequently been done away with and now replaced by, or soon to be replaced by, the BMA, which is controlled by the Ministry of Home Affairs.
Yeah, no, that process we know it.
Sure.
The process is beneath Parliament and still with Parliament is not yet finalized. So in the absence of the new regime that we envisage, the BCOCC still stands. I'll take it because the amendment that came in, the immigration amendment, the new bill that came in fact, is still not yet even, it's still in the second house of Parliament. It's not yet even adopted by the NCOP. So we still have to sit with whatever arrangement that is there for now, which the department, in line of failure to adopt the new amendment, the new regime, it means that there must be clear clarity on who's in charge there, right? But that's our business, obviously.
Sure.
But it becomes a business, too, because at the level of the port of entry, we expect that coordinating. Hence, we're listing the number of departments that are involved with you there. But what was interesting for us was, what is interesting for us is to understand the level of the people that serve in the BCOCC. You may find that that's just an ordinary manager at the airport there, having to take decisions that impact nationally, right? Right. Hence, the point we're making again is that the Minister of Home Affairs is involved in the process. Other ministers, what is their role, right? That's what this committee is going to have to probe further. Okay, you can proceed.
Thank you, Chair. If I can just highlight some very key points before going into the operational side. To date, we have had to comply with legislation when dealing with each of the state entities, and that is through all the engagement processes with members of the BCOCC and government, higher government levels. I will go through a detailed analysis of the approval process in a short moment. However, in terms of, in an attempt to answer your question, In terms of the starting to operate the facility, we met each of the requirements of the BCOCC operationally. Aviation is highly regulated. You cannot blink, you cannot move, you cannot do anything without an approval in place. You cannot pump fuel without someone who's a designated person to put fuel into an aeroplane. He also, from a fuel perspective, cannot put fuel into an aircraft with the crew being available at the aircraft. So it's highly regulated without the crew. So just going on to the point where there's a perception that certain movements are taking place at our discretion, it's baseless. It's absolutely not possible to conduct any movement from Fireblade, domestically or internationally, that no one knows about. It's impossible. It is not... You made reference, Chair, to the agreement. I would like to just make this very clear, that it's not a gentleman's agreement. There is a detailed standard operating procedure, which we refer to as the SOP, and is currently being updated, which is the version 2 that my colleagues have referred to, which has been agreed by all the relevant stakeholders and was submitted on the 4th of April 2018 to the Ministry of Home Affairs for their final perusal, approval, and to this date we still await for that.
That's version 1
of that agreement was agreed at the BCOCC in 2015. It wasn't signed, it was agreed.
Which parties have signed yourself, you have not put your signature in any document.
It was a meeting, I mean, you were at that meeting, Robbie. It's better that you actually speak first.
But Chair, post the court findings and the judgments passed in January of this year, the Home Affairs were instructed to implement international status with immediate effect. And through that process, we had extensive engagements with the DG and the Ministry of Home Affairs and all other stakeholders involved.
No, that's fine. Let's proceed. That's fine. But please feel free to speak. I've allowed four of you to speak. I don't have a problem. As long as you're going to be on record, as long as you can press the mic and be on record, I'll be happy. Because we want to get every single little thing that you want to share with you. You are free to talk to us.
Mr. Chairman, in 2015, during this journey while we were waiting for international movements, as part of the agreements, as I described to you, this constant, we're getting it tomorrow. The BCOCC, of which we had status as an observer, discussed the standard operating procedures of Fireblade and agreed them with all the actors. There was no document to sign. It was the agreement of the BCOCC. That agreement was subsequently updated after the court judgments, and that is the version 2, which is now with Home Affairs as of the 4th of April this year.
So currently in your engagement with Home Affairs, who is the person that you're engaging with Home Affairs? Who's the liaising person of Home Affairs that you talk to?
Chair, we were in liaising directly with DG Apleni at the time.
Yeah.
And also a lady by the name of Rika Anka, who heads up Ports Authority.
Okay.
Jackie McKay is another one that was involved in all the discussions. Mm-hmm. It's quite a big delegation. SARS were involved. Every applicable entity...
No, that's fine. I wanted specifically to get Home Affairs as the coordinating department. I wanted to know who is in charge there, the person that you are liaising with all of these processes. From January to today, when was the court judgment delivered? Was it January?
Chair, it was January.
January. Today is it October now? So it's November now. January to November, today, there's no signed document. And I'm not putting a blame on you. Those who are responsible to sign the document, right? Let's proceed then with the operational matters that we did receive a brief, by the way, right? With the, when the plane lands, what happened, at what point do you notify the relevant department, 24 hours. I just want you just to capture it for us for record purpose, right? we did receive that information at the level of your people that we met at the airport. For now, what is important is just to get you on record on such operations. Well, there's no paper that we have here, right? We rely on what you're going to be telling us under oath to be the truth, nothing else but the truth, okay? So we have done that exercise. For now, let's get that. We will have to, moving forward, we'll have to look at the way forward with the committee. We'll deal with that with the committee. Let's proceed with those operational issues quickly.
Chair, thank you. If I may take this opportunity to talk you through the list of approvals, which are all documented, and copies will be made available to the committee.
Come to Parliament. You must come prepared, Mr. I know and I accept the statement that you have made. We are very detailed. We want, when we say bring the document, we want documents, right? Okay? That's what must happen next time. So well, that you don't treat you like the preferential treatment again that you get from Parliament, that we can't even call for documents. When everybody that appears here submit documents, okay? There's no preferential treatment here. So we're going to agree on the date, the time that we're going to expect a list of documents that we're going to ask you. So we'll outline those documents as we close the meeting later, okay? And those documents will have to be delivered in time. If you have to fly a private jet to bring them here, that would be lovely. Okay, thank you very much. Let's proceed.
Well noted, Chair. And okay. For the record, we will make sure that the relevant documentation
okay,
is available. In terms of the approvals granted, I'm going to go through all of them in detail because they're very pertinent to your assessment and your scrutiny process. Initial engagement on this particular project started in August 2012. Danel were obviously identified as a suitable site. With that, we engaged with Danel Industrial Prop.
Okay. I want you just to deal with operational issues. How do you deal with operational issues? Here is a plane, gentleman from New York, whatever, is coming here. How do you deal with that? And how do you get to notify whoever that you must notify? How do you receive and how do you do it? That's the only part that I want you to deal with.
So, Chair, just to confirm, you don't want the list of approvals?
We want submitted, but not...
Okay. I'm going to talk you through this very chronologically. Per agreement with AXA, Airports Company of South Africa, only non-scheduled private or corporate flights are allowed to operate through the Fireblade facility. Now, the differential between non-scheduled and scheduled are commercial airliners. Non-scheduled are general aviation private aircraft. The Fireblade Aviation Operations Team will play the nodal role in setting up customer requests to use the FBO for international arrivals and departures. The Fireblade Operations Team receives handling requests for OR Tumbo from private operators around the world or general aviation operators either via email or telephonic call being received. Each request is acknowledged by Fireblade in an email to the customer confirming the service request. I touched on the point earlier, and you will see as we go through this, aviation is highly regulated. There's absolutely no chance you can miss something, because if you do, you stand a high degree of losing your operating license. Typically, customers wanting services for international arriving and departing visiting flights to OR Tumba International Airport, the Fireblade Terminal, would need to provide the same information required by all role players in the BMA, stroke BCOCC, to enable Fireblade to apply for the mandated. Each international flight would need Fireblade to apply or provide the information for applying for a South African landing clearance, applying and setting up the arrival and departure slots and filing of flight plans, advising the AMC, which is the Airport Management Center, it's a division of AXA that controls and regulates every ground aircraft movement and the billing that takes place at OR Tumbo. In addition, Danel to ensure the main OR Tumbo runway and taxiways are not congested. Applying for services from the BMA stroke BCOCC for each international arrival and departure. Setting up ground handling with the Fireblade FBO service agents, providing services at the Fireblade FBO once the international procedures for passengers, air crew and aircraft have been taken care of at the OR Tambo main terminal. Setting up of crew rest services, which include hotel bookings and crew travel arrangements to and from the hotel. Settling of any, and more often all, fees on behalf of each customer for rebill at a later stage. Each international visiting aircraft must have a landing permission mandated and issued by the Ministry of Transport. On this application, each operator is required to advise the purpose of the trip, as well as the basics, such as the operator name, aircraft details, passenger details, and intended route. Fireblade Operations does assist operators with this process, but some operators apply through their own channels. In all cases, the Fireblade Operations team requests the landing permission number to ensure approval of the flight by the Ministry of Transport. OR Tambo International is a slot-coordinated airfield. This means that all movements into and out of the airport and its airspace are controlled through allocated timings applied for with CAMU, which is abbreviation for the Central Airspace Management Unit, which is a division of ATNS, Air Traffic and Navigation Systems. These timings are called slots. By doing this, the airfield can track the movements not only for arrival and departure times, but by collaborations with AXA, Airports Company of South Africa, accounts to ensure appropriate fees are charged to the parties applying for the slots. Fireblade Aviation does apply to CAMU for internationals arriving and departing slots on behalf of the operators. Included in these applications are the flight origin and destination. Once the application has been approved with the allocated time slot, the operator customer is advised by email formally. The same platform goes for filing or flight plans, which is a requirement. Flight plans are filed through the OR Tambo International Briefing Office. Apart from the basic safety equipment, persons on board, the route and timings the aircraft wishes to operate within, the flight plan also indicates the operator details. Fireblade either assists with filing the flight plan or contacts the briefing office to confirm that they have the flight plan in the system. A flight reference number is issued, in fact always issued, by the OR Tambo International Briefing Office to confirm the said flight plan. The confirmation of this is sent to Fireblade to the customer. The AMC and Danel operations team are advised of each intended movement to ensure traffic flow is managed accordingly. The notification is also a prerequisite to ensure the echo gates, which is operated by AXA and Danel, will be opened on times as access to Danel is restricted to notified movements only. Bearing in mind the echo gates are two independently controlled gates. One is controlled by Danel and one is controlled by AXA Operations. The AMC and Danel operations teams are advised of each intended movement to ensure traffic flow is managed appropriately. The notification is also a prerequisite, which I've just touched on, forgive me. The process below outlines the procedures to be followed. Fireblade Operations must, as a prerequisite, give the BMA / BCOCC role players and operational decision makers 24 hours notice of each international arrival or departure, unless approval has been obtained for an ad hoc short notice flight in advance. This will allow sufficient time for departments to screen the passenger lists and do the security checks required. Notice will be provided by means of email to the mailing provided by the BMA / BCOCC. Additional movement updates will be sent via text to the designated persons on duty to update arrival and departure times. The BMA role players will require the following information for each flight, and this is quite critical for safety and security purposes, particularly from a BMA BCOCC control perspective. aircraft registration and call sign, aircraft type, year of manufacture and serial number, point of origin and departure destination, expected time of arrival or departure at Owatumba International Airport, expected numbers of crew and passengers, passenger and crew names as per passport, passport numbers and licenses on general declaration, which we refer to as a GenDec, a cargo manifest, if applicable, applicable health questionnaires as per Department of Health requirements, so should an aircraft be coming in from any particular territory that's a high-risk zone in Africa or any other parts of the world, it has to be decontaminated and sprayed accordingly. Anticipated rifle or bodyguard movements will need to be declared to the SAPS or Owatumba International Movements. What we do find, and this is very important to note, is that with high-profile people traveling around the world and coming out to South Africa for hunting trips, there could be hunting rifles or security guards that carry weapons. SAPS and State Security Agency need to be notified in advance.
On that point, do you do that? Do you notify them in time? Because this point came up.
This is 24 hours prior.
This point came up during our visit.
Yeah. Chair, right? I can confirm.
And my point, the point I was making earlier was that the level and the capacity of the police to respond on such issues, right? And fairly so. You must be able to guide us again.
Yeah.
If you yourself have identified weaknesses, please raise those issues. To say, but this is what we find, you know, somehow police are not yet properly capacitated to deal with such matters. You are in the operation, right? In the best interest of your country too. You are able to share with us. Or privately you can write to us and say, we believe that these are the following gaps that need to be closed because we have experienced such issues. For example, the point that Mr. Mann is making of the box that came from the Gupta flight, right? And that has been a very good thing to have been done. Rather than just allowing it to pass. After a few telephone calls, they have to ship. Somehow it went out of the country. Somehow that box went out of the country. Either it will have gone to one of the private airports, either, I don't want to mention them, but maybe it's Lanseria or whatever airport, but that box will have left the country somehow. Okay? So these are things that we have a particular interest as the Committee of Parliament, you know, to share with us as we prepare moving forward, maybe we'll need some legislation in place and to reinforce current legislation that is in place, right? So that's an engagement that we're engaging with. We're engaging with you as true South Africans, by the way, but business people at the same time. We want to encourage you to invest more money in place so that we create more jobs for our people at the same time, okay? But things that we have to be accountable for, you're going to account and clearly in Parliament and without fear or favor, okay? So thank you very much on that list. No, I'm not losing the meeting. No. I always motivate the engagement so that people who are before the committee must feel free to engage with us. Okay, let's proceed and then we're still going to take the... How much time do you have? We're still going to take the last round. I think we'll allow just one or two comments from members as we begin the process of wrapping up. Okay?
Thank you, Chair. If I may just continue to elaborate further on how the movements are processed. Only once the BMA stroke role players have approved the pre-clearance information will the flight be given permission to use the Fireblade FBO terminal. Fireblade will provide transport to the BMA stroke BCOCC role players as agreed in the SOP and collect them from the Owatumba main terminal landside to Fireblade FBO and return them to the main terminal post the flight. All officials should be at the Fireblade terminal 2 hours prior to each international flight arrival or departure to ensure the necessary checks are ready, levels have been actioned. Each stakeholder will man their station or office in the international arrivals or departure terminal to which Fireblade staff will have no domain during any movements taking place. So much so that Fireblade does not have access to those facilities without a state authority authorizing them to get access to those zones and being in their presence.
Now the point that we're making across the service that the state provides. They get notified, they then move into the space.
Correct.
They come there, they drive around, They come there, then they perform what they must perform, and then for free, and then they go back again.
Yeah. And in addition to that, Chair, if I can just comment, at all times, whilst the sterile zone is unmanned, no Fireblade personnel member will have access to that zone.
Okay.
For security reasons.
Okay. Okay, no, thank you. Let me give Mamu Kalipi, Honorable Hussein. We're now working on wrapping up. Are we satisfied with the responses so far? Members who have asked questions? Are we? Okay, so for now it's fine. I'll give it, make a follow-up. I just wanted to check if there's more hands. Mamu Kalipi, you're on the floor.
Thank you very much, Chair. No, you're correctly. When we were there, unfortunately, you were not there to receive us on the day, on the 31st of August. But we were with the department, the acting DG, and we raised this this concern of coordination of operations. We were not happy as a committee. That 24 hours notice, so it's having some concerns as members to say that the department, especially the department who must guide our interest as the country, need to be notified by you who's operating there. So what if you decided not to notify them in 24 hours? That is our...
Relax, Chief.
We gave you a chance as well. So, but I don't think it's for them to answer that, Chair. Because, you know, we're doing our oversight as the committee, but we're just telling you what we went through during that meeting to say that there is something that needs to be fixed here. That's one. And Chair will concur with me. All along, the Portfolio Committee of Home Affairs have been told that the Fireblade is within OR Tambo. We thought it's within, it's inside OR Tambo. Up until that day when we learned that, no, it's not even in OR Tambo. It's like 20 to 30 minutes away from OR Tambo.
Okay, no,
I'm going to call Mketama to come back to you. That is not your fault, okay?
No. You're not used to it because we fly there. Yeah. We drive from the airport. We drive on the other side of Kempton Park.
Exactly.
To reach the Fireblade, okay? We took 30 minutes to get there.
As people who are supposed to do the oversight, and we were shocked to learn that, no, we're not going inside OR Tambo.
Yeah.
That is our main concern as well. But we will address that with the department as well because that were the back stops. I was listening to you, all of you, when you were responding to our question. And then what I pick it up is that now you have a faith in a new president. After that announcement on investment that he said, I think it has been a week or so. And then you even commented that you are committing yourself in two projects. My question then, have you met the new president? Have you discussed the new president regarding this project? Where the former minister have changed the heart? That's one. The second question is that, have you met with the new current Minister of Finance as former Premier of Northern Cape said that it was Minister Nhlanhla who was the Finance Minister when all these projects were trying to put together. So now there's a new minister. So those arrangements with the chair called gentleman agreement. So have you also appraised him with the new development regarding this project? So, now, I just want to get, because I wanted to, on my first question, I bet you are going to respond to say, because I was listening to Jonathan, trying to justify why you want to push ahead with a non-profit project. And then you even said to you are losing. You are estimating that you are going to make money, but so far, we are losing. So why are you pushing with this thing while you are losing? That is the main question. So, maybe you have convinced us. You intended to make profit, but the project went wrong. But you still want to go ahead with the project. And then I ask you a question that in some parts of the world, we do have such facilities, especially in mining and in farms, whereby other things are happening that's not supposed to be happening. So the question to you, Mr. Nick, if any of your companies in South Africa are involved in aggressive tax avoidance, or in profit shifting, please answer very, very honestly, because we need to know exactly what are we dealing with.
We have
yes.
As long as we are able to respond to them, that will be okay. But members too, again, let's stick to the Fireblade arrangement.
And then the Fireblade, Jonathan, you told us that you, so far we have 52 staff members. Can you also just break it down in terms of demographics and gender in order to be with you, to know what is happening? Are we getting there as a country since there's an unemployment rate in South Africa? Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Maybe you may want to send out, if you are not able to get the last one, you may want to send out just a breakdown of the staff complement in your area of operation.
Chairman, can I just deal with
that? No.
Because it will take a second.
I don't know. Okay, that's fine. Let me give you, but also you will come after. Mom Damuza will close it. Mom Damuza will be there. Okay, no. I'm now going to be giving members, each I'm going to give you 2 minutes just to finalize the wrap-up questions, okay? Because we need to close at some point. I think we got the points that we wanted. I think we managed to break through and get what we wanted out of this engagement. But nonetheless, I'm not closing the meeting now. Colleagues still have questions. You want to respond, Stanek? You want to respond?
Yep. No, thank you, Chairman. No, tax avoidance, no.
Okay. No, that's
and just to say, too, that while I have met President Ramaphosa in the past, before he became president, I should think I met him last 2 years ago, I would think. And Minister Mbeweni, I haven't shaken hands with for many years.
Please note that we are in the Committee of Parliament. Is it? We are very important people too.
On the first question, what happens if no 24-hour notice is given? The aircraft will not enter South African airspace, or will not taxi out from Farblade. Can't be done.
Okay. All right, Orson.
Okay, I just want to probe this thing about this elusive box that you referred to. Something just doesn't make sense to me. If I attempt to try to take any box of whatever nature through Oratambo International Airport, somebody will have to come and bail me out. But from what I understand, what you've said is that there was an attempt to take some box. Nobody knows what was in the box, and was there an attempt to bring it into the country or take it out of the country? And so they were prevented from doing so, but then they take the box and put it back in the car and disappear. Now, therein lies my concern. How is it that that there was no form of security or police who decided to ask, open this box and tell us what's in there? And you just allow people to just simply walk away, whether it's the Gupta family or whoever. But there was no further probe of it, and it just ended there. That surely can't be right.
That is why the point Tono was saying is the capacity of the police that meant that particular force of entry, right? And I think in a scanner report, it will detail what was the content of the box. It does not tell you. If it flags, it tells you something. There are two things that it will tell you. If it tells you either it's diamonds or it's drugs, it does not tell you, or it's money. Yes,
Mr. Chairman, firstly, this was before we had international status, so we had no international movements.
Okay.
Secondly, our rights as a private company were to not allow the transition from ground side to air side as per our agreements with AXA in terms of providing air side security. At no point were we able to look inside the suitcase, and as a consequence, the owners of the suitcase agreed, somewhat reluctantly initially, to take the suitcase and take it off the premises. We had no right to take it. We have no authority in terms of the security we provide other than to prevent goods moving from ground side to air side.
Okay.
I'm concerned that we lose the thread of...
No. I want you to hold on. Let them speak on this thing, because you've raised a point. Allow them to speak on it. You'll come back.
Sure. Just to stress, as Jonathan said, this was pre-international movements through Farblade. So there were no police on site. This was
only a terminal used for domestic flights. And as Jonathan said, our sole right was to prevent goods moving from landside to airside. And when they refused to open the suitcase, and as you rightly say, we don't know what was in it, it was just something that raised the suspicion of the X-ray operator, all we could do was say, we are not prepared to allow this particular piece of luggage to go from landside to airside. In a similar circumstances today, with international movements taking place and police on site, the situation would be very different.
Who's they that you referred to, may I just ask?
Sorry?
You say they took it back. Who's the they? I mean, who's the person who attempted to take the suitcase through the...
The company that was being supported... The company that the luggage was going to was a Gupta-controlled company, and it was a Gupta-controlled aeroplane. And I don't know who the individuals were, but clearly they were people either directed by or in the employ of that company.
And the matter was then reported to the... You reported the matter where? To the police or to who? As required by law. What then happened?
Chair, it was reported by a director of flight operations and security to the relevant authorities at Owa Tambo.
Who's the relevant authority at Owa Tambo?
It would be the BCRCC members and state security.
Okay. So there's a report for that?
Yeah.
There's a report for that. Okay. That's fine, because we have noted it, and we then said that we may want to make a follow-up to such matters. It does concern us, especially being the Portfolio Committee of Home Affairs in charge of a port of entry, right? The BCRCC is under the command and control of Home Affairs, generally. So if such things happen and Home Affairs is unable to deal with such matters and follow up and investigate and arrest those criminals who are trying to smuggle whatever that they were trying to smuggle out of the country. So on that note, Mamu Ngoma, we'll close now. You'll close, Mamu. What's called a Dambuza. You'll close. Mamu Gomet. Mamu Ngoma. Hey, it's not. I know that you're from Soweto, so you like this place called the Open Air in Soweto.
Oh, yes, I do.
Okay, proceed.
Like I stated, Chairperson, I know them very well. Chairperson, the first issue which I would like to ask about, it would be the issue of benchmarking, because I think I heard Jonathan when you were talking and you were saying, you know, this Fireblade is one of the best things, you know, we've got so many in the world and all that. If you were to benchmark, say, out of 10 of the best, where are we? Secondly, Chairperson, I'm not sure if that question was answered when I had gone out. It's the question of community involvement. Remember I asked about that. And I said that, you know, some of us have been under cupboards and under chairs and under everything. And what happened here earlier could be a manifestation of not involving the community in these ventures. And like I said, I know a lot of your projects and how communities were involved. But with this one, it seems as if you're just talking to Department of Home Affairs, Department of Transport, Department of whatever, but the communities, how are they also involved in that? Thank you.
In the community that they were starting a business now, Fireblaze, community camp. But that's the point. The point is that, you know, when you are in that particular space having these experiences, you want to really communicate open of the business that you do. That's why the point I was making earlier was that maybe your communication and media unit will have jacked up somehow again. That's to communicate proper to say, you know, this thing has been in the round for quite some time. Hence the impression is now given that there's some fraudulent things that have happened there. You know, and you're supposed to be responding. Maybe you, Mr. Manu, who knows public perception generally, you'll have made sure that, you know, you're able to take the community and South Africans in general. You know, and the international people that use your facility must be clear and happy that this thing is not under any scrutiny and all of that. You know, it does
the business values and really creates good opportunities for you to get more aircraft than you have. This is what we want to see moving forward, generally. Okay? Mamu, you speak as a comment at the end as you close.
No, Chair. I think my question has been responded to the first one of security. But in terms of the user fee principle for other departments, because I know that they do pay fees for the use of the Department of Home Affairs staff members. But in terms of the other department, and I wanted the clarity from what
the agreement.
Yes. In that medium term. Yes. I wanted to know, does it relate to all the personnel, government personnel that are being operating there for Fireblade, or it was just specifically for Home Affairs? Thank you.
Maybe as you do that, this will have to be reflected somehow in some agreement that they've entered on the payment of the 117,000, meaning that someone will have made a calculation of the service that is being provided will worth so much from government point of view. That's why you are expected to pay 117, is that per month? 117,000 per month. Now, I don't want to dwell much about the issue of your lease, because your lease is not with Home Affairs General, it's with AXA and Danel there. I don't want to deal with that. Maybe the interesting part will be around the issue of Home Affairs and this 117,000 agreed upon, calculated, and where do you pay that money? We pay it in the account of the department. You pay it in the account of the Department of Home Affairs, or you pay it at the Department of Treasury. Where do you pay this 117,000? In that agreement, it has to be reflected that this is what you have agreed upon. Now, with the infrastructure that you have put there, what then happens after the lease ends? Is there an arrangement that, or in the agreement? So I'm avoiding really for us to get into the detail of that, as long as we can get a copy. We ourselves will go through that agreement that we have. But for me, there will be a number of questions over here. You have put up infrastructure, you have built this, you have put a gym there. There's no swimming pool, eh? There's no swimming pool. But you have put up a gym there, you have put up a holding facility, which is 5-star for those that are not permitted to come into the country, whatever, even if their flight is delayed, some mini hotel there on top there. All of those things are the infrastructure that you have put with 150 million investment that you have put into that thing. After 10 years, what then happened to those things? You may, at the end, want to talk to us. But in passing, this, for me, there's further engagement that is still required with the department now, and departments, by the way, that are involved in providing that service. So before you respond, let me give Mera Puti still as and up. Mamura Puti, I think, Mr. Mani, earlier when I was talking, I deliberately said you must talk about the Kimberley. There's a point that Mera Puti raised about the whole the Kimberley hold, and how do you associate yourself with the Kimberley hold. Maybe I thought you from Kimberley, you'll be able to respond to that. But again, generally, the point that she raised around the issue of the usage of the family, I think that has been clarified, that 90% of the facilities utilized by public. It's only a small percentage from 6% at some point to 5% out of the 18,000 people that have passed through the process. I think that has been clarified under oath. Mamu Raput, you can still come in. Mamu Kenya, I want us to wrap up. Mamu Raput, you're on the floor.
Yeah, entertain me. I'm just reflecting when we visited that area, that fire plant, I saw most of the government, some of the people were government employees,
And I'm just asking myself, the job opportunities in that area, if the state, if there were government employees there, how are you envisaging creating job opportunities for youth in that tablet? Because I saw government employees being the ones that are servicing you. And it's still a big question whether the chairperson, whether the ruling from the court that it favored you, but I'm still saying that, is it fair? And Tate Mani, you were a shop steward. And that role in Kimberley, a tourist attraction, that was created by our Niki, Tate Niki and Tate Jonathan. An environmental impact issue, what do you say? I don't think that is an environmental attraction, because this is the choice of the Oppenheimers. Because we are not saving...
Normally I avoid...
Yeah, but I just wanted to check about that.
No. Normally, you know, I allow every member to raise any
question. No, it was not answered.
No.
It was not answered.
No, I'm sharing this meeting now. I always allow members to raise, and I don't even interfere when members ask questions. Mm-hmm. Members must be relevant to the issues that we're dealing with. On a serious note, the issue of disaster of the Kimberley home to be answered today in this meeting with the new fire blade has not arrived. I mean, please, let's just give the parliament speakers that it deserves and engage with people according to what we want them to respond on and all of that. And I think the whip of the party too, you know, when you deal with such matters, please just guide each other and help one another so that we are not able, you know, we don't end up being, you know, as if we don't know what is it that we want to achieve out of this engagement here.
It will be answered.
No.
You said that it will be answered and there's nothing wrong with that.
Okay, we'll talk about the Kimberley Home then. I'll allow you to talk about the Kimberley Home. I will come on the Mbuza.
Chair, I want to respect you. I want to respect my honorable member there. I come out there for a long time. But I think that the agenda guides us, all of us. I've been a chair of this organization for many years in the Northern Cape, chair of that province for 14 years. I want to assist. If you want to speak about all other matters, even in the Northern Cape, I'm available. Not in this type of, because yes, the agenda is fireblade per se. Very important matters we're dealing with. About the big hole and what has happened to the diamonds and so on, I'm ready and availing myself to Mama to talk to. If she wants to call me in another meeting or another committee, I'll be doing that. But thank you very much, Mama. I'm available to do that to you. Thanks.
Mama, I want Mama Tamuza to close this thing, but let me give you the minute. Okay, Mama, okay? Yes, Mama. That's the last question. Jose, when you start to scratch your head, I know.
I want you to finish the point of procedure.
I still have 5 minutes. I have 5 minutes left to give members. 5 minutes, please. I'm going to give you 5 minutes. Okay? Please come, okay?
Okay, Chairperson, I just want to ask a small question. Now that we're talking about the security of the country also, now I just want to check where you feature in the Minister of State Security and Defence on the issue. Just to check, because I noticed that we are always talking about the Home Affairs Minister and leaving out the security cluster ministers.
BCOCC is a law that was passed by Parliament. It tells you which bodies that are involved in the border management. BCOCC. Defence does not come in there. It tells you of strictly the people that is a law that is passed by this parliament that we are doing oversight on. Hence, these people are here today because they are controlled and commanded under the BCOCC run by the Department of Home Affairs. So you don't have to respond on that one. No. Some comment? Okay, okay.
No, thank you, Chairperson. In fact, mine was a request to clarify the position of the ANC on the unfortunate events that have happened earlier, but preferably after the responses.
Okay. But we said we'll engage on issues of what happened here in the House, the occurrence that happened here. We'll deal with it, that's fine. Also, we are wrapping up now. I know the way you're looking at me, one the last one. Yes.
I don't have a question, but I want to avoid a situation where you make the closing comments and then we're done, and then nothing comes out of it. So I just want to hear from you, once we've concluded with the responses, will we have a few minutes as the committee to just decide on the way forward? Or
no, well, I think what we'll do, we'll have what they call the podcast for the guests that are here on issues that we expect from them. The rest of the issues that remain is with the state now. The rest of the issues, this is what we'll discuss moving forward. For now, what we'll require, because I'm now wrapping up the meeting, is that there are documents that we expect that the Fireblade must provide to Parliament. And these documents are simple. It's that copy of that agreement that we want that we do not get. You are in possession of that copy. You have to give us that copy. Within, today is Tuesday, by Friday, make sure that we receive the copy of that. Because that agreement is the one that tells us what is it that has been agreed upon by all parties. Right? By all parties. Okay? That's the first document that I will expect that we must receive it as Parliament. The rest of the documents that we have made mention of, the court orders and all of those documents are in the public domain. Now, the Parliament Committee and the Legal Service of Parliament has extracted a lot of these documents. So we don't need much from you when it comes to documentation, because even Honorable Hussein and all members that are here, you are in position, even we have even looked at the court order itself. You know, we have analyzed it properly. Parliament has done that, and that document has been delivered to members. What we need will be that particular area. What is required urgently from our side is to call the department and the Minister of Home Affairs. This is what is required urgently. Because you have a situation here that a court order was issued in January. Court order that brings the activities of Fireblades to operate now. That's the court order. To date, we don't have an agreement with them. January to date, there's no written agreement, and the state is providing a service. There's no written agreement. And there's what we now call the 117,000 that is being paid, right? So where you're going to meet here is that under your BCOCC is that engagement with the department, which is the leader of the BCOCC, right? For them to come in, give us the details, and tell us when are they going to sign off that agreement, right? For me, this is what is important out of the engagement we've had today. Other than that, maybe if I were to give members of the committee, will be to assist the chair with your own comments of what we expect from the Fireblade. Because for me, I don't want even to appear to be wanting to argue the court order, right? Because the order has been given by the court. I don't want to appear to be arguing it and to want to put question against what. What I want to see from this committee will be how do we put this into operation proper, with proper agreement in place, and making sure that the state services that are provided are paid for. The state cannot provide a service to a private arrangement for free. Even your ordinary South Africans, when the police, we pay them salaries out of their taxes, the police make sure that we sleep in peace and all of that. Those who commit crime, they get arrested and all of that. We go to clinics. free healthcare, free education, and all of that. That is from the taxpayers' money. So there must be accountability when we have to deal with the private arrangement, right? And I think the notion that we call it a family arrangement, it's a private arrangement of a company called the Fireblade that the state provides the service to, right? So we want the state to be very clear around these issues. The rest of the work that must be done will be the gaps that we have identified, the issue of the policy, first of all, because it cannot be that we arrive at an agreement initiated based on our discussion. There must be a policy in place that guides such arrangements, you know. Same applies with your Lanceria that has been identified today, that they provide such a service, and government officials go there and provide. In fact, they are permanent there. If you go to Lanceria, you will get permanent immigration officers that are stationed there. The state is paying for those permanent people. Health people are there. SARS people are there in Lanceria, right? And the state is paid, and it's a private entity. It's not owned by the state, right? The company that is running Lanceria, it is a private, it's not a state-owned arrangement there. But the state is providing a service. So the issue of policy and legislation will have to be looked at, you know, because the Department of Home Affairs, with the agreement that they are going to sign, must be based on a policy that is there. If there's no policy, then we can enter into some agreement. But for Parliament, and Parliament's responsibility will be to make sure that there's legislation in place that governs such arrangements. Because we're going to have more of them, right? As we're dealing with this issue in the last engagement with the committee, we got information that other business people have a particular interest. One was already applying for a Georgia airport, right? And we know those people. It was reported here in the committee. Others were applying for the Cape Town airport to have the portion of the Cape Town to be run private, right? And these are wealthy people who are there who can afford this thing. But the role of the state is to legislate, to make sure that you put in policy, right? Either you deny it or it becomes only that Fireblade arrangement that you have entered with the Yuar Tambo airport. Because these other people are going to challenge you too. Because they are going to have a particular interest. They already shown that they have a particular interest. They will come to the state, and the state cannot say, we can't do it, we can only do it for the open, for the Fireblade. You know? So it's important that we must engage with the leader of the BCOCC, who happened to be Home Affairs. That's what I think from the level of the committee we should do. All of these other issues, you have noted them. We are going to get clarity from the Department of Home Affairs. What informs the 117,000? Right? The cost of the movement of SARS, of health, agriculture, all of these people, as they drive around 30 kilometers to go to the point around the airport, at the back of the airport there. Who pays for that? Right? So these are things that we have to be taken into account. And who determined the 117,000? Can they give us a breakdown? What does it cover? We don't know. But the arrangement between yourself and them is that you can only afford to pay 117,000. I don't even want to ask you how much you are making there. It's your private issue there. What my interest is of this committee is the role of government and the government services that we provide there. Because I'll take it that whatever that you make there, you do pay your taxes as required by the law. Hence the point that is raised by Mom Kalipi that you are up to date with your taxes. Okay? So all of these things relate to what the state provides and the accountability, therefore. Parliament, and its committees of Parliament, every single cent of the state that gets spent by the state, it must be accounted for. And that accountability will get it from the Department of Home Affairs and those departments that are providing a service to Fireblade. I can't expect you now to say account on the monies that government is spending for you. You can't. It's only the department that must account. And therefore, Minister Manuzi Gigaba, who is the head of the BCOC's Border Management Committee, he's responsible to account to this committee on such activities. He's responsible to come back and share with us the issue of the agreement. Because where we are sitting, it's not acceptable. That's the point I said earlier. We are not a banana republic where things can just be arranged there.
agreements must be in place for you to be able to operate. And we can't push you and say, give us the agreement, when the agreement is with the state. And the role of Parliament is to call the Minister of Home Affairs and say, you are sitting with an agreement since from January, or even before January. What is happening? Why are you not signing it? These are things that we must do as Parliament. You can't have a situation where a private company, with good intentions, you know, the fact that you have identified this earlier and you decided that we are not making money, but as business model that we have, you know at some point we'll make a breakthrough. And we will not want to contest you. What we want to know is that the state money that is provided, the services that are provided, are paid for, and it's agreed for, it's accounted for. In the APP of the Department of Home Affairs, we don't have what we call the fire blade services. It's not there. In the APP of Health Department, they don't have the services of fire blade. Finance, everybody, they don't have that. But they are spending money as government to save this fire blade. Okay? So this is what I think the intention was. That is why the hearing today was more about a follow-up of a meeting that we have been to the fire blade. We have observed exactly the activities that are happening there. And today was for you to confirm those activities. And the role of the Department of Home Affairs, meaning that government providing a service to a private company for free. But here we are dealing with the payment is being made of 117,000. In other areas, Lanseria, your Kruger, we have to investigate how we are providing these services. I don't want to make a conclusion now that they are paying or the reason. You may even find that there's not even an agreement between ourselves and the Lanseria, ourselves and the Kruger and many other private entities that the state provide the service there. You may find that there are no agreements. We are just providing, right? So these are things that I believe that as Parliament we have to address ourselves. We have to call those who are responsible to come and account to the committee. We have done it before. We are told that the minister is appealing the decision of the Supreme Court of Appeal. We have now learned that it's not true what we learned. It's something else that is appealing for, right? So these are things that I believe that Parliament still has an opportunity to invite the minister, to invite this department, and any other department that wants to invite on this particular area of work. Any other department that is involved there, we have a right to do that as Parliament. Invite them to come and account and tell us how do they arrive at such arrangements and all of that. Okay? So for me, these are the points that I thought we should note as we move forward. And I've said that this is not the end of the engagement. It's clear that we still want to have more engagement with yourselves, together with the department and those that are responsible. At some point, we may want even to visit the airport again and meet the entire echelon of the people who are there, and the levels of the people that take decisions there. At the level of the BCOCC, it's only meant for coordination. It's not meant to take decisions and make policy. It's not. It's only meant to coordinate at the point of entry. Policy is done at the highest level. At the level of the minister, the level of the director general of the department and parliament. That's where the responsibility of policy making and policy formulation comes in. Now, at the lowest level there, you find people entering into some arrangement. What informs them to enter into those arrangements? Okay? So for me, colleagues, as I close this meeting, is to firstly appreciate your coming to this portfolio committee meeting. That it was one of the easiest things to do to get you here. We never struggled, by the way. We wrote one letter. The following day, we got the response that you are ready to come and account. And for that, I want to applaud you and to thank you very much to have done that. And I don't want to make an example of other people who are still holding us at ransom, who do not want to come here. They want us to pay them business class tickets when they've stolen so much of the public money. Now, we want to thank you very much for that. But rest assured that as we thank you very much, issues that we have raised, issues that have been raised by members here, are issues that yourself, in fact, you must know them and look at how best you can then make this issue work better. Okay? We are not revising the court order. What we are simply saying to you is that there is a need, in fact, as Parliament to make sure that the operations become proper and informed by a clear policy and clear agreements that must be in place. That's what we are saying to you, right? And on that note, we'll then engage with the Department of Home Affairs. We'll engage with the Minister of Home Affairs further, because we've already started to engage with him. We'll engage with him further to get clarity on this matter, but to push for a proper agreement that must be shared. And the draft document that we have, draft two, Friday we want that document here before the committee. Address it, we'll give you the address where you must send it. Friday, we want that draft to watch call. On that note, I think that's where we're going to end now. We will then communicate with you if there's further engagement that is still required moving forward. Okay.
Chairman, thank you very much, and we appreciate the opportunity. Jonathan and I says we're passionate about aviation, and actually we bore people to death about Fireblade. So any opportunity to talk about Fireblade, we're there. And thank you for your guidance. I think on the question, just on the question of the payments and who pays.
I want you to do a vote of thanks too. They're going to come to members. These are members of Parliament.
Yeah.
They're not dealing, they're going to respond to what you're going to say. So just dealing with your vote of thanks is anything to say.
Thank you, Chairman. Your advice is well taken.
Thank you very much. On that note, the meeting is then adjourned. Can we have we're going to agree. Let's have a break for 5 minutes, members, just to allow the Fireblade directors to do the meeting. And then we'll then come back to the program of the committee and deal with